It's Tuesday, the 31st of July, 2012. I'm Alex Jones. Strap yourselves in because this is a marathon, hard-hitting transmission of InfoWars nightly news. Straight ahead.
Tonight, the NYPD is set to launch the All-Scene Domain Awareness System. It's a program that combines citywide video surveillance with law enforcement databases to track citizens. Plus, bankers are literally throwing themselves off buildings in the wake of the recent financial crisis. Then,
they won't hesitate to throw a bomb into your establishment or to take one of your family members and slice and dice them and send them back to you day by day in terms of different body parts.
George Grayson talks with Alex Jones about the escalating Los Zetas criminal takeover in Mexico. And the author of Bloodlines of the Illuminati, Fritz Springmeier, in studio. That's up next on the InfoWars Nightly News.
And as I said, we have a huge transmission lined up for you tonight. In studio, Fritz Springmeier coming up, and then we're going to have a professor who's traveled scores of times to Mexico to study exactly what's happening down there. Is Mexico a failed state? Will its collapse bleed over into the United States? Well, we know it already is. The question is, how bad will it be? That is all coming up. Now, we've got a bunch of news we're going to cover here, but first off, see, we told you so. We told you this a couple years ago when they started the NATO bombardment of Libya to put al-Qaeda in, that was going to be a al-Qaeda takeover. And then we told you al-Qaeda would be exported by NATO into Syria. Wasn't hard to know. They had big signs on the news saying, Syria, here we come. So they exported al-Qaeda, the NATO secret army they used against the Serbs and the Russians, in there. And they're blowing up police stations, schools, government facilities. And the media, for a while, admitted it, but said, well, there's just a few al-Qaeda. Now the London Guardian reports al-Qaeda turns tide for rebels in battle for eastern Syria. And it goes on to talk about how incredible they are and how they've got nice uniforms and they've got discipline and they wear little al-Qaeda black uniforms. And they're not that bad. I mean, they're kind of cool. They're fighting Assad. Of course, they're the ones committing the atrocities and blaming it on Assad. I'm not saying he's perfect, but probably the most stabilizing force in the Middle East. That's why he's gone. And here's one out of Asia Times. Oh, look. I actually have the Asia Times here, a print off of it. Work of the Nation, the Center of Intelligence, Career Opportunities, CIA.gov. Yeah, and then right here, the career opportunities are funding al-Qaeda to blow up schools full of kids so that you can then take over and put jihadis in and murder women en masse and kill all the Jews and Christians there while getting Americans to give up their rights, fearing the Muslim extremists you run. So there's your career at the CIA if you want to ship narcotics in, little kids out to slave camps, all right there for you. Again, career opportunities right there for everybody in jihadi forces. German intelligence estimates that around 90 terror attacks that can be attributed to organizations that are close to al-Qaeda or jihadist groups were carried out in Syria between the end of December and the beginning of July. Yeah, and our news would say Assad did them. I mean, this is really sweet. I'm supposed to have the TSA grow up my wife, my daughters, my son, me, do a proctology exam because al-Qaeda is everywhere. They set up random checkpoints on highways now to, let's just stop a major highway, see if al-Qaeda is rolling through here. But then al-Qaeda openly works and was created by the New World Order. You know, the bankers that are totally criminal. So there you have it. And then we have Paul Watson's article that I will direct you to, where now, this evening, this just broke a little while ago, now they're spinning it that, well, al-Qaeda's there. and Al-Qaeda's with Assad, so we've got to invade. And you know what? The American people are like, yeah, nuke the entire place if Al-Qaeda's there. But then later they say, yeah, Al-Qaeda worked for us, but they might be a problem. We better take over. Al-Qaeda will be in charge. So you land Al-Qaeda in Libya, you land them, you bring them into Syria out of Turkey and out of Jordan and other areas. And then the public, so dumb, you say we've got to bomb it and invade it, but the bombs aren't war, they're peace bombs. We've got to come in right now because Al-Qaeda is there. And then you're trying to explain to the general public and they go, hey, if you know how to tie your shoelaces, it's conspiracy theory. If you know how to breathe, if you believe up is up and down is down, that's a conspiracy theory because having an IQ above room temperature is now a terrorist act. What did Eric Blair, a.k.a. George Orwell, say? He said, in a world of universal deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. So there you go. Give up all your rights because Al-Qaeda is absolutely everywhere, but on every front, including 9/11, all we know is the hijackers were U.S. government agents trained and protected, and that was even in the news. But everybody's like, just ignore that. Give your rights up. It's more fun anyways. So, again, I am now a good Crime Stop 1984 citizen. Al-Qaeda is bad and totally evil. I should give up all my rights. They are behind every hedgerow. They are hiding under this table. Thank God Homeland Security is launching a total takeover of society and butchering the Bill of Rights and Constitution. All hail Janet Napolitano, drones, total control, end of freedom. Please, NSA, spy on me. Oh, my God, Al-Qaeda is so scary. So that's over here on one side of my brain. But on the other side, Al-Qaeda are freedom fighters with incredible organizational skill who fight real tyranny and bring freedom to women. And they did a great job in Libya and Syria. And, well, hail Al-Qaeda. And all the major Al-Qaeda people publicly work at the Pentagon, but then they stage their killings once that comes out. But ignore all that. And the underwear bomber was gotten on the plane by the U.S. government. We broke down a month and a half before it came out. But I guess that's reasonable. I mean, I'm reading these articles now, and it's like, man, Al-Qaeda was going to get the job done. Yeah, they're kind of cool, man. And I'm like, no, they're not. They're like, oh, yeah, it's not trendy. What, are you racist against Al-Qaeda? Let me look inside you. Let me look inside, right inside, right underneath the table. Let me look inside your table.
Excuse me, we're the toilet police, toilet safety police. We have to...
They can only get away with this because the public is under a mind control trance. And those of us that are sane and still know what's going on, the zombies think we're insane. And you know my analogy I've used probably 500 times. Let me use it for the 501st. If you were to beam back to the height of the Mayan culture under Aztec rule, that's just a tribe, a group of Mayan culture that dominated. Sound like Texans or Texas, but we're still Americans. The Aztecs had taken over. And if you were to teleport back and go, you don't need to sacrifice 10 women and children at sunrise every day. You're killing your own population. You can't even operate. They would look at you like you're crazy. So I admit I'm crazy. I would go to the Nazis as they were running people down into pits to shoot them in the back of the head. And I would say, you know, I think it's pretty crazy just to kill all these people. But again, I'm the bad guy. I would tell Stalin, don't kill 10 million Ukrainians. But I'm the extremist because in this psycho world, whoever is in charge wearing a uniform, if they want to roast babies, chop them up, flay them, it's good. The only normalcy is worshiping the biggest psychopath in the room, being a total slave to conformity and doing what you're told. And so I will admit it here. I am insane. I don't like tyranny. I don't like slavery. I don't like bullies. I don't like out-of-control control freaks. I don't like tyranny. And so I admit it. I am filth. You that love all this disease and death, you are the rulers. So enjoy the heavenly creation that you've constructed. I stand in awe. Now, I've admitted it. I don't support Al-Qaeda. I'm not a patriotic person. The sword of the New World Order is Al-Qaeda. I've always said that. They're the magic key to scare anyone to letting the TSA into their pants and the NSA into your computer and the IRS without warrants or due process into your bank account, as the New World Order is exempt from all taxes and rules. That is the essence of tyranny. All right, moving right along to our first official report this evening. NYPD to launch surveillance software system. I covered this some yesterday, and they say,
It's face scanning, it's license plate reading, and other technology, and we're just surveying, listening to your cell phones, but, you know, that's classified. And who have they hired to help run all this? Well, the former head of Penn State, little bird, told me. The Homeland Security said he's been hired to Homeland Security, but no one can know his job. It's so secret. You know, people that cover up pedophilia, that's where they go. And, well, now my little bird told me that it's helping run this pre-crime system. So there is some breaking news for you right there. And we have a couple of clips here where they tell us how great all of this is. They're also announcing all over the country you can't collect rainwater at your own house, or you're going to be charged taxes when water falls on your lawn. And the carbon tax is a tax on breathing. But, hey, that's freedom. Again, insane people like me think that's tyranny. But, again, here is the pre-crime system in New York, cesspit city. Here it is.
The NYPD will store video from its own security cameras, most of them are in Manhattan, along with video from privately owned security cameras whose owners have agreed to join the system. The video, taken in public places only, can be viewed instantly here at the Police Counterterrorism Command Center in Lower Manhattan.
The Counterterrorism Command Center. They had the old one in Building 7, which they moved out the day before. And the State Department and Justice Department and FEMA admitted, as part of an international drill, they did a drill of the buildings being blown up, but and then it all blew up. That was Tripod 2, but I guess everything's okay. Do we have another clip? Yeah. Here's one more of the anti-terror command center, which is filled with the terrorists. That is at the top. I mean, you believe folks involved in 9/11 are running that center. But the lower-level folks are being taught terrorism is criticizing government or filming a police checkpoint. They're all just a bunch of, low-IQ fluoride heads. Here we go.
The NYPD getting ready to launch new surveillance technology right here in the city.
It's supposed to keep us safe from crime and terrorism, but there are some concerns that the new program does not go far enough. Fox 5's Antoine Lewis is in Lower Manhattan, or does it go too far? What do you think, Antoine?
Well, that's the debate. Me personally, I'm all for the police doing everything to keep us safe. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, government's killed 262 million people in the last century, and this government, openly run by eugenicists, is putting fluoride in the water that even Harvard admits is causing massive cancer increases and massive IQ reduction. But you don't know that because you've been drinking fluoride your whole life. So kiss your butt goodbye. You're part of the winning team. Oh, I like face scanning and license plate reading cameras everywhere. Of course, a few years ago, we told you the cameras never be used as civilian. But right now, they are going to be used as civilian. And yeah, the drones were going to be used as civilian. But now they admit the drones are going to be used as civilian. And they weren't going to be weaponized, but now we admit they're going to be weaponized. Did I mention cancer's up several thousand percentage points? I'm going to take a shot. Oh, love the government. Oh, love the government. I mean, it has reached cuckoo level. No, I'm serious. I'm cuckoo because I don't like Al-Qaeda. I've got something to admit. I knew Al-Qaeda was run by the globalists, the bankers, so I talked bad about them. And then people said I was unpatriotic because I wasn't scared of them. Now that Al-Qaeda's big heroes, well, I had to go back in the alley and crawl under a dumpster and just lay there. I wasn't trendy. I didn't like Al-Qaeda. I'm sorry to all of you. The NYPD's going to keep us safe, though. Yeah, a bunch of known narcotics trafficking gangsters forever. I mean, NYPD helps kidnap little kids and supply them to the Saudis. I mean, oh, keep us safe, please, demons. Please, hellspawn. Please, Satan. Save me. Okay, let's move along here. Oh, don't worry. White House chef says future food to be made from chemicals, not real food and ingredients. Yeah, Monsanto, all the big GMO companies, the companies being started by our loving little friend Bill Gates, they say they're going to take toxic waste and chemicals. That's what aspartame is fecal material of a GMO bacteria, E. coli, that eats toxic waste. And now you're going to be fed, we actually have the quotes here, chemical compounds. You make a dish, and it goes on to break down how you will be fed chemicals that are, of course, friendly to animals. Bacteria stews, you name it. It's all part of the great future they've got all planned for us with all the systems they're putting in with our money. I don't know about you, but I've decided to be trendy. I think it's great. White House says future food to be made from chemicals. Of course, McDonald's and all that already is. They're just getting us used to it. I mean, what's wrong with dying of kidney failure and cancer? I mean, hell.
Every 2 years, a consortium of Europe's most active minds converge on Euroscience Open Forum to discuss the latest advancements in scientific research innovation. But this year's meeting, which was held in Dublin, Ireland, featured a disturbing workshop held by White House executive pastry chef Bill Yossies, who explained and demonstrated to audience members how food of the future will not actually contain real food, but rather various combinations of lab-created chemicals that mimic food. Well, of course. I mean, come on. Mommy, is it true once we got food that grew? No, that's what Al-Qaeda says. As reported on 6-1 News, a feature of RTE News in Ireland, the White House says other food experts showed a live audience how to create various foams, gels, solids, and other food-like texture substances out of chemicals that, when combined, resemble things like lemon and chocolate pudding. Well, is it, was there really once something called chocolate? No, honey, you'll go to re-education. Now take your pills. Mommy, could people really once walk and not be in these tanks? Was there really once billions? No, honey, there wasn't. These food scientists, mommy, did mommies used to give you milk out of their breasts? Oh, that's a real, no, never happened. These food scientists then shared samples of laboratory creations with audience members who were told the imitation food products are the wave of the future. Oh, yeah, if you tell a trendy that shitting themselves in the head is trendy, they do it. If you tell them jumping off a cliff is trendy, it's, I mean, if you tell them putting their kid in a microwave, if you tell the trendy it's the trendy thing to do, put your two-year-old, cram them in a microwave, an industrial microwave, and they would do it. While their eyeballs popped out, they would just be, oh, trendy, oh, trendy. So I'm serious. I mean, it's total insanity. Crazy people have taken over. All right, let's continue here. ATF head clarifies remarks from video. He's in the video going, if you go outside the chain of command, we're going to grind on down and you will be disciplined. And they're trying to fire people that expose their shipping guns to Mexico to blame the Second Amendment. But he comes out and says, oh, no, no, no. You're allowed to if it's an authorized whistleblow to Congress, who then sends a hit team to your house. Or puts a gag order to you like Sybil Edmonds while they're narcotics trafficking and all their other murder operations. These guys all compete with each other on who's the most hardcore criminal. Whoa, the ghost surveillance. Keep us safe from Al-Qaeda. I'm being a little sarcastic tonight because I can't handle it anymore. Let's go to Darren McBreen's report on this from last week that was sacrilegious against our loving ATF, oh, that are good people. Here it is.
Now, earlier this month, acting ATF Director Todd Jones, well, he sent a memo to ATF employees warning potential whistleblowers that they will face consequences if they don't respect the chain of command and ask permission to release information damaging to the agency. If you don't find the way to raise your concerns to your leadership, there will be consequences. Todd Jones says in the video, because we cannot tolerate an undisciplined organization. One of the undisciplined ATF employees managed to make a copy of the video. It's now being circulated, thankfully, on the internet. And, you know, I thought it looked like something straight out of 1984. Todd Jones looking very Big Brother-like in this clip. And, well, especially when you present it like this.
Choices and consequences. And when I'm talking about choices and consequences, I'm talking about the disciplinary process. What my expectation is, as the acting director, when it comes to the disciplinary process. Choices and consequences simply means that as an employee of ATF, should you decide not to abide by the standards of conduct or the rules of the road, should you decide that you're not going to play by the rules, there will be consequences. Choices and consequences mean simply that if you make poor choices, that if you don't abide by the rules, that if you don't respect the chain of command, if you don't find the appropriate way to raise your concerns to your leadership, there will be consequences because we cannot tolerate an undisciplined organization. And the next time that we talk, we'll start to grind down on some of the specifics about how we're going to actually follow through on this accelerated change that we've been implementing here at ATF over the last 9 months. Thank you for your attention. Keep your comments coming in, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
So there you have it. Whistleblowers will face consequences. And you know, Senator Charles Grassley from Iowa and Representative Daryl Issa from California, they actually sent a letter this week to Todd Jones declaring the message, and I'm going to quote here, it could be interpreted as a threat. Yeah, you think? ATF spokeswoman Ginger Colburn said the video was directed at employees who violate the rules, and it was not directed at those with protected disclosure. Yeah. Hey, do me a favor. Play the video again, this time without sound. I'm going to try to translate what I think Todd Jones is really trying to say here. Hello. We will not tolerate anyone telling the truth to the public. Truth tellers will not be tolerated. If you disclose our illegal activities, we are going to F you up. You and your family will suffer. Now go back to sleep. Everything is fine. Big Brother loves you. And by the way, I'm naked from the waist down. Oh, okay, you can stop there. All right, stop. You know, it's no secret that ATF whistleblowers were instrumental in exposing the illegal Operation Fast and Furious. So I think Todd Jones is really saying, shh. That's what it looks like to me, so.
Let's move along now from our gracious leader, to Monsanto, who's got a bill about to pass to give them total liability protection, and none of their products will have to be approved anymore. I mean, these are, they gave you Agent Orange dioxin, aspartame. These are good people. Now, of course, they admit that none of their workers will eat at Monsanto food at their cafeterias for 12 years, but, you know, that's because they want to keep all the good Monsanto food for us. It's because they want to take care of us. And anybody that talks bad about them is anti-America and anti-Al-Qaeda, our hero forces battling Assad. And I'm proud to be an American where Al-Qaeda battles forth. And I want the TSA to stick their hands down my pants like they did before. And I gladly stand up next to you and drink sodium fluoride today, 'cause there ain't no doubt we're the center of genetic warfare. God bless the globalist evil. I mean USA, excuse me. All right. I'm sorry. Bob, do you like the show tonight? I actually have two Bobs in the studio tonight. I'll leave it at that. We actually do. We have like a couple of Bobs. Wait, Bob. Rob. Three Robs. Rob. I never even realized we had three Robs. But two go by Bob. Only one goes by Rob. That's right. All right. I'm just continuing to get with the program here. I am Monsanto defrauded GM cornfield workers lawsuit claims. They should arrest those that sued Monsanto. This is just horrible. And it breaks down how they supposedly did all this and how they have a predatory operation and everything. I don't believe a word of it. Let me tell you something. Monsanto's the reason the sun comes up. You un-American filth. All right, let's continue here. Critic of NBC has Twitter account suspended after network complaints. They're arresting people in England that say, hey, you did a terrible job and you're diving. They say that can hurt somebody's feelings. They actually arrested the guy. Did you see that today? I think it's absolutely wonderful. I think arrest anybody. Just arrest them now. And it wasn't even a death threat. It wasn't even Guy Adams worked as a writer for the Independent, a national newspaper in Great Britain. He lives in Los Angeles. Throughout the Olympics, he's taken to Twitter and ripped NBC repeatedly for its coverage of the games in America. Well, how dare him. Namely, he's criticized the network's reliance on using tape delays and frustration shared by millions of viewers. Well, only in a marriage of old media and social media. Guy Adams no longer has a Twitter account. It was suspended Tuesday. And then they describe it as a death threat, but he didn't say that. He said, Am I alone in wondering why NBC Olympics thinks it's acceptable to pretend this road race is being broadcast live? He wrote in one. Well, that's it. That's threats. Get rid of him. Folks, he criticized NBC. That is not trendy. Now, UK teen arrested after Olympic diver Tom Daley receives Twitter death threat. And then I read the article. All he said was, your father would not be proud of you. But then they call it a death threat, and I read it everywhere. I went and looked at the tweet. It didn't say that. UK teen arrested after Olympic team receives Twitter death threat. Yeah, there it is. I have the article right there. Okay, let's shift gears to the good people. The good people that extremists have talked bad about. HSBC says, sorry, take $700 million hit for U.S. fraud. And, you know, that's running Al-Qaeda funds, fixing rates, everything else. You know what? Making hundreds of billions off it and paying a $700 million. You know what? I think that's wrong. I mean, I think them. Again, Al-Qaeda is glorious. And the money laundering, all of it. I mean, what's wrong with that? All the other big banks do it. I mean, this these are good people. Okay, this is the new show where we, like, appreciate the hard work of these folks. But there's always people that have to take the fall after the loving banks get caught running Al-Qaeda, laundering money and drugs and everything. Tate Modern Death Plunge, man Michael Foreman was senior bank manager at HSBC, a man who fell 100 feet to his death from a balcony at the busy Tate Modern Art Gallery in London was a senior bank manager at HSBC, inquest has learned. Well, who knows how many others are going to have to fall to their deaths to make sure the banks can continue blessing us. Continuing here, colossal human sculpture unearthed in Turkey. And government built it, Obama said today. Archaeologists in southeastern Turkey have discovered an enormous stone sculpture of a Neo-Hittite warrior king dating from the first millennium B.C. And finally, labor scandal. Deutsche Bank admits some staff involved. No. Maybe that staff member was involved. That's who stole it all. That's who did it all. Deutsche Bank has confirmed that a limited number of staff were involved in a LIBOR rate rigging scandal. It was a small number, a limited number, and they're going to be jumping off balconies very, very soon to make sure those above them don't get any trouble. Well, that's it for the news portion of this transmission. We'll go to break and come back with Fritz Springmeier in studio, and then we have the good professor joining us about the wonderland that gun disarmament and Fast and Furious has created in Mexico. We'll be right back. I'm Alex Jones. Don't forget, if you're a viewer out there on internet land, want to support what we're doing here, even though we don't support Al-Qaeda, you might want to become a 15-cent-a-day member at PrisonPlanet.tv. And don't forget PlanetInfoWars.com, the Patriot social network that's free as well. And don't forget that, government hung the moon and is the reason I'm able to breathe air. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Alex Jones here with a message to fellow freedom lovers. The prognosis for the entire planetary economic system runs from bad to worse. The globalist model is to shut down societies and starve patriots out until they acquiesce to the global takeover. That's why we've assembled the most vital and important preparedness items at InfoWarsShop.com. These are items that I did research on, that I personally use. We've got the Life Straw, so you can turn fetid water into safe water anywhere you go. The KTOR hand crank generator to charge up key equipment during power outages or out in the field. Strategic Relocation, third edition by Joel Skousen. When Disaster Strikes by Matthew Stein. TheraSafe, used by Homeland Security to protect yourself during any radiological event. Hand crank shortwave AM/FM radios. Everything that we've researched and found to be the best is available at InfoWarsShop.com, and your purchase makes our InfoWar possible. We're getting prepared. Are you? InfoWarsShop.com.
sick of the globalist eugenicist control freaks adding poison to your water and laughing as you get sick and die? Start purifying your water with ProPure. My friends, I've done a lot of research, and the best gravity filter out there, bar none, is ProPure, and it's available discounted at InfoWars.com. Its filters are silver impregnated to prevent bacterial growth. There's no priming required. It's NSF 42 certified. Optional fluoride filters can reduce fluoride up to 95%. Easy to set up and use. Doesn't require electricity. Purify water from lakes, streams, ponds, and wells. This filter system leaves in beneficial minerals, which is key. Save money by not buying bottled water and avoid BPA that leaches from the plastic. ProPure is the best gravity-fed filter out there. It's what my family uses. InfoWars.com already has the lowest price on ProPure. But if you add the promo code WATER at checkout, you get an additional 10% off at InfoWars.com. You can also call to order 888-253-3139.
And we are back. Thank you for joining us for the interview portion of this Tuesday, the 31st of July, 2012 edition of Teleprompter Free News. We're going to have for close to an hour with us Fritz Springmeier, author, researcher, here in studio, former political prisoner. He wrote, amongst many other books, Bloodlines of the Illuminati, which is the first place I read a lot of things that are now admitted. But when I read this 15 years ago, I thought it was, well, a lot of it was wild. Some of it I already knew from my own research, but a lot of it was just over the top. And then over the years, so much of it has turned out to be true. I found none of it that I could prove wrong. And I wish that wasn't the case because I mean, look how it turned out that, of course, Sandusky was raping kids in broad daylight, you know, in the middle of the day in the showers. And, of course, it turned out the entire leadership knew, and the local word is, it's on the local news, they were selling the kids to all these elitists. That's what comes out of the Catholic Church now with all that infiltration. It's what's going on in Congress. They just hired the head of Penn State, who was caught covering up, to work for Homeland Security in a super secret position. We don't get to know. You know, that's where these sickos go now, is just to higher and higher levels of power. But if you study history, every ancient culture sacrificed human beings and tortured them and did other rituals. And in every culture, sickos gravitated to power positions and demanded firstborn be sacrificed, whether it was the Mayans or the Druids in Europe, or whether it was Central Asia, what's Pakistan today, or the Middle East. Every culture does this. And when you know anthropology and sociology and elite psychology throughout history, then you read a book like this and you understand Bloodlines, the Illuminati, and how real this is. I'm not saying I have all the answers. I'm not saying Fritz is right about everything. We're looking for the truth, though. That's the difference. We all wear rose-colored glasses, but we're looking for the truth. We're not trying to put out disinformation like the corporatist media. So I got a host of issues I want to cover with Fritz, who's here in town. He's visiting his father, who lives nearby Austin, San Antonio, to be exact. And so it's a rare in-studio visit with Fritz Springmeier. And I want to go over, just starting off, the Aurora shooting of a few weeks ago and whether he thinks that has any telltale signs of being staged. And then I want to look at his awakening, his path, in an abbreviated breakdown of how you woke up, what you witnessed, how you discovered the Illuminati. Because we got some of your books here that are out of print that I hope to get back into print. The Illuminati formula used to create an undetectable mind control slave. We're going to go over some of this book, show some of the exhibits here on air. And another one of his books that's out of print, this was out of print, Bloodlines was, but we reprinted it, Deeper Insights into Illuminati Formula, Part 1, how the Control Comes About by Fritz Springmeier, Part 2, How the Help Comes About with Cisco Wheeler. And so, again, he joins us here today to break this down. Then I have a few news articles I want to mention to him later. Okay, Fritz, good to have you here in studio, my friend.
Thank you. It's a privilege.
It's a privilege to have you here. Tell us about, actually, let's get into your awakening first and the short course and how you woke up to mind control. Then let's get into the current events and then back in to the deeper areas of mind control. But tell us about Fritz Springmeier.
Okay. All of us have heard the term mind control, but I was totally unaware of the Illuminati's mind control, which is like a million times more powerful than what we think of when we think of mind control. I started working with people that were trying to escape the Illuminati, and at that point, my learning curve improved drastically because I started realizing the things that were keeping them from escaping. And one of the big things was the mind control. If they tried to talk about what they had been involved with, suicide programming would kick in. And so I had to deal with suicide programming like the woman that helped me with this deeper insights. As we would be going through deprogramming, I would sometimes be dealing with like six or more suicide programmings going off. She'd be wanting to slash herself. She would be grabbing drugs, and I'd be having to take them out of her hand and on and on. And so I had to watch every second to make sure that she didn't self-destruct. I got on-the-job training, and I got to see the handlers, the programmers, and all these people come around, try to interfere in her life. It was totally amazing. And so I guess you could say I was learning in the School of Hard Knocks, and at a certain point, I felt like I knew enough and had gotten to the point where I could expose what was going on. And I tried to, I had like 150 files of different things that were being done in the mind control, and I knew that was way too much. And I boiled it down to 12 sciences and came out with this book so that people could realize how the formula is constructed. The mind control is not one item. What makes it so powerful is that they're taking every known technique of controlling a person and they're putting it into a recipe, a group package that's very sophisticatedly engineered.
Full spectrum.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, as kids, we used to do a real simple type of mind control. We'd grab someone's arm and twist it behind their back and say, say uncle, you know. Well, they also use physical threats against people. And if you start to think about each one of these types of mind control, in themselves, they're almost sufficient to control a person. But if you add them together in a sophisticated package, that group package locks the person in. And not only that, but they have these people blackmailed. They sometimes set them up with great careers. Maybe they're a judge, but they've come in, and like Cisco would tell me, she would tell me how she was used as like a 10-year-old. She would go into a judge who would enjoy this pedophilia experience, and then she would have a part of her mind, which is called an altar, that was programmed to go comatose. So in the middle of him slapping her around, she would go comatose. He would think that she had died, that he had murdered this little child that he was sexually abusing. And then, of course, the Illuminati come in and say, well, we'll take care of this. Well, no problem. We'll take care of this so you don't get into trouble. But all the time, they're taking all the evidence and everything, and that's put in a file. I had a friend who actually saw all of the files for his state that showed that everybody who was of any significance and had any power, they had the goods on that person, that if they didn't toe the line, they could send them to prison. So even if the person that you know that is in government has a good heart, they know that they have to toe the line if they don't want to be taken down. And sometimes some of these characters that we see in the media that they decide to go after, they've stepped over the line somewhere, and now they're going down, and they have the power to do it.
Sure, and the system also promotes their compromised minions and then gets them to run for office. And then the occasional person that gets in who they don't control, they just try to demonize.
Right, exactly. Or they just ignore. If you're not, for years, I was putting out this important information, and I was totally ignored. You know, I mean, mainstream media never interviewed me. Now, thanks to you and your show, I'm getting some exposure. But for many years, I was just a quiet mouse in the corner.
When do they really start coming after you? I mean, do you know what buttons it was that you pushed or what tripwires you hit?
I started writing and exposing them in 1990, and what happened was is they started surrounding me with a lot of people that pretended to be my friends but weren't. Were working for them, and they were sizing me up. They were sizing up where my weak points were, what my routines, how I thought. And then in 95, so it took them about 4 years, in 95, everything just came down on me. And I believe I was divinely protected, and I came out through that at the end of 95, still intact and still able to stand on my feet, so to speak. And then the next time I really got slam dunk was in 2001. When they raided my place, which felt like a full military operation, helicopters. The helicopters chased the horses in my pasture so that they ran through the barbed wire fence and had to be sewed up the next day by the vet. They had snipers in the woods. It was a full-blown military operation when they raided my place. And from then on, it was just a matter of time before they were able to incarcerate me. And, of course, you know the rest of the story.
Well, Fritz, continuing along the line of all this, you know, we don't just talk about, Pedophile Valley there in Pennsylvania and that whole operation with kids or Boys Town or any of this or the UN. You just type in UN, child sex slaves. There's thousands of articles. They're always doing it. And they go diplomatic immunity.
Right.
This is a guild. This is a group that gets into power so they can operate and get away with it. And it even came out that the Texas Youth Commission, with all the kids they've grabbed, the CPS, you name it, were using them as child sex slave brothels, and the Texas Rangers tried to stop them, and they were blocked. And the head of the DPS was removed. So even when the state police tried to stop it, it was no. And that was exactly what came out in the news, but only the back of the paper, was it was judges and the local government people. They were the ones going to the youth commissions to rape the children. And then, I mean, and you realize, my God, there's these, who are these people? I guess you could call them the Illuminati.
Well, not all of them necessarily are part of the Illuminati, but they're definitely part of the network. They're going along with the system, and they've gone beyond. At first, they were just using this trauma-based mind control on their own people, but they've now expanded it. It's being used on the general population.
That was my next question. I have it right here. Mass mind control. Mm. You're talking about suicide record in the military. It's like 6-7 times any previous record. Death education, which they prove teaches kids how to commit suicide, so that number goes up. The psychotropics cause suicide. Then there's more suicide. There's more psychotropics. I mean, this is quite a plan they've created, but they admit people go into a dream state when they go into suspended disbelief. I go to a movie now, never suspend disbelief. It's like childlike watching the public watch these movies. Other people, though, TV, anything, they're in a dream state. Describe the language is being reduced. People's brainwaves are being lowered. Break down the mass mind control, how that's working.
Well, the television is a very effective vehicle, and Anton LaVey said that was a satanic altar to bring Satanism to the general population.
They assault you through it.
Yeah, yeah, and he's right. It's most amazing. I've sat there and watched Christians. They're not even critically thinking. They put in these Walt Disney movies that are just a cult from start to finish, and then feel like they're giving their children something decent. Even watching the Olympics, you know. And I'm not trying to say this to criticize anything. I'm just making, raising people's awareness. This Olympics that we have going on, the first song that they played, that the orchestra played, was Nimrod. Who is Nimrod? And these people, the Rothschilds that I write about in there, they trace their genealogy back to Nimrod. Who was Nimrod? And why do we celebrate Christmas when we celebrate it?
Well, let me ask you the question.
All questions people should be asking.
Since you bring up the Olympics, for those that didn't watch it, I watched the opening ceremony, like 2 hours of it. It was nauseating because I was fully conscious watching it. Flashing pyramids, all-seeing eyes, eyes on fire, men humping each other, but at split second, I'm like telling my family, do you see this? They're like, no, what are you seeing? I'm like, well, you're relaxed. Wake up. Right. Women kissing, and the media even covered it later, but they would flash women kissing. This is little kids are watching this. Women kissing, men humping, pyramids, demons rising, feeding on children in hospital beds, three different audios at once to overwhelm the conscious mind. Explain what's happening there. Because it's, I mean, it's overt mind control, but like you said, it was what you said, it was total fusion. After about an hour and a half, had to go out of the room, and I kept coming back, and I said, that's it, let's turn it off. I was becoming physically ill because it was just this banging and clanging, and my mom's like, why is it so horrible? Why is it? I was like, that's the point. And then after two or three horrible songs, they would play something cute like Chariots of Fire with a goofy guy jogging, and that was the rest, and the torture, and then it would come back in.
Exactly. And what you have is several levels of things happening. One is you have your generalized mass mind control where they're making the general population dissociative and planting things in. But then there's a deeper thing where these people here that are under the Illuminati's total mind control, they're embedding triggers, they're embedding programming symbols and stuff in there, also in that kind of stuff. And also, they use watershed events like Princess Di or 9/11. They use watershed events in these people's mind control time clocks. They've got an internal time clock because they're all programmed to do some little part in this whole big long script. And those are controlled by major events. So there's no way that the mind control victim is not going to hear about, like, the shooting that just happened. And that shooting that just happened in Denver is going to then cause his little internal clock to turn a little bit so that at a certain point, now he's going to do his little part in this big script that they have. It's very orchestrated. You know, we talk about, they say, well, it wasn't time for this invention. As I was working with the deprogramming of people, I was shocked to discover they are actually programming inventions into people, programming this person over here to accidentally meet this person, and then synergistically all of this scripted thing, and it looks like...
That sounds crazy, but they admit this. They're into playing God. Why do they, I mean, I have my ideas about it because I've studied classic black magic that they follow, so I understand them. They believe in lesser magic. You have to build the model of it, burn a ship before you really burn it a month later, kill an effigy of a child before you really do it. They believe that magnifies the power hundreds of times, so that's why they always tell us in movies and TV exactly what they're going to do, like 9/11. They had shows where the government flies a plane in the building to have martial law to attack Afghanistan. They use a drill to make it stand down. But it can also be an open threat to other governments. Hey, see, we really did this. Explain why they always have to tell you what they're going to do.
Well, you did a good job right there. And another reason is these people that are trapped in the mind control, if they do want to break free, they're just told, look, we showed them exactly what we were going to do, and did anybody do anything about it? I mean, you think that you're going to escape from us when our symbol is on the back of every dollar bill? You know, you walk into every federal building and there's our symbol?
So it's gang tagging. Yeah, you're saying, yeah. I mean, it's like this is our, you know, Sauron symbols, the all-seeing eye.
Yeah.
We're in control.
Right.
You figure that out yet? We'll do what we want.
Right. We'll even show them what we're going to do, and they're not going to do anything. And you can't run from us. We're everywhere. We're the all-seeing eye. You know, they like you say, they're wanting to play God. They want their little slaves to think that they're omniscient, omnipotent. Of course, we know that there is a God, and he's much bigger than them, and they can think that they're God, but they're not.
Well, yeah, because they're following a dark force, but also they're still just people. They're trying to control everything, but they're not in control of themselves.
True. And just the mere fact that you and I are still here and operating is proof that there is a God.
I agree with you. It's certainly, I mean, we certainly get persecuted. I haven't been persecuted like you have, and I don't need to be tested like Job. I know all good things are from God. I don't think they're coming from me, but I tell you, it is just fantastical to see how much stuff we thought was conspiracy and we weren't sure about is now just out in the open. Mm-hmm. Why is everything coming so out in the open now?
Well, there was a book that Alice Bailey wrote, Externalization of the Hierarchy, and she explained that that's what the Illuminati hierarchy wanted to do. They wanted to take what they were doing in secret, and they wanted to turn it over to, and put it to the public arena. And so now we see all of these Illuminati hand signs. We see all of these occult symbols that become popular. And that's what they wanted to do. She said that they're going to create a world religion. Basically, it's a witchcraft religion. And you'll notice that you can go to all kinds of stores, your fast food places, and so forth, and they will promote witchcraft on their bags that they give you the hamburger in, or their placemats, or the toys that they sell. But if someone were to try to, like if you went to Wendy's and they put Christ on the bag that they gave you the hamburger in, people would protest. And yet they can promote witchcraft, and it's acceptable. It's quite amazing the extent that they have conditioned the public.
And then they've got all these well-meaning people that go, oh, I'm into white witchcraft. They don't understand the roots of it. Go to the roots of the Illuminati religion, because when I interrupted you, we're getting into the opening thing being Nimrod, the beginning of their great work, and the Rothschilds, you know, tracing themselves back to Nimrod, and they say that. And of course, then they think they're Merovingians too, back to Christ and all this. You know, the child with Mary Magdalene they claim happened, you know, the Holy Grail type business. Who do they really think they are? Who are the Illuminati? And if they have their way, what is the world they're going to build?
Well, the members that I was working with would tell me that at the high level meetings they were actually receiving instructions from Satan, and Christians can accept that, but non-Christians might find that startling. I'm just sharing with the audience what I was told. They would describe these encounters and what would happen, and if we think of what the Bible says about Satan, is that he had been given as a cherub this planet, and then God kind of ignored him in a sense by turning over dominion of this planet to humankind. And he told Adam and Eve, he said, you know, you are to take care of this. This is a garden. You're to, you know, I'm giving you dominion over things. And so we see this incredible jealousy which translates into the desire to destroy the human race. And when I look at their agenda, it doesn't look to me like a human agenda. It looks like, whether you want to call them evil aliens or demonic or whatever, this agenda is for the destruction of the human race.
And our DNA is being fried.
Exactly.
The sperm counts. I mean, they're killing us. We're in deep trouble.
Yeah, it's genocide.
No flesh would be left if God is intervening.
Exactly. It's a genocidal... that's one reason why I'm standing up and doing what I have been doing, is because I'm just one little insignificant person. But their agenda is horrific. And so when you see the magnitude of what of the evil that they have planned, and like you've been talking about, the pedophilia and abuse of the children and the white slavery and so forth, how can a person not stand up and say, hey, enough is enough.
And notice how they're openly saying, yeah, we kill people. Yeah, we torture people. Yeah, we do sexual things to them in the torture. HBO recently puts on shows during the family hour showing 4-year-old girls doing things I can't say on air. But it's okay for them to do it. They could just bombard during the Olympics. I mean, there is this, it's not about tolerance. It's not about freedom. They want to hurt people. They want to destroy innocence. Everything I read about the devil, that's them.
Yeah.
So even if the devil doesn't exist, as some atheists believe, whatever, it's manifesting through these people.
Yes. And then the good, nice front cover for Satan is Lucifer. Lucifer is said to be the light bearer. And then an even better front cover for Lucifer is Prometheus. And I'm surprised that they haven't promoted Prometheus before now. They've just recently come out with a film, Prometheus.
So we're seeing a lot of Prometheus iconography.
Yeah. Because that's the good front for Lucifer.
Yeah, he's the guy that gives fire to the humans.
Who gives knowledge and wisdom. Right. He's defying the gods.
But the devil always seeks to actually control and dumb down. So explain that riddle of the Bible that Lucifer wants to give us knowledge.
Well, he really doesn't. As you know, we're paid in counterfeit. He pays in counterfeit.
Everything's a fraud. It's a twisted knowledge.
Exactly. Like you were saying earlier on your show, what's right is now seen as wrong, and what was wrong is now right. Everything's upside down. So all this great wisdom and knowledge that they have is really dung. You know,
because man had the perfect knowledge of being with the Creator and in God's creation and being good and pure. The knowledge of good and evil was evil hadn't even entered the equation. So the twisted knowledge or the virus was exactly. Injected. That's
exactly. So we're these people are not bringing us enlightenment. They're bringing destruction. And they promise freedom, but they're actually giving slavery. It's just like the toys you have out there, I saw, you know, that they're selling in the stores. Peacekeepers. And they're soldiers, you know.
Well, it says world government peacekeepers. None of them say U.S. anymore. And they all have hateful looks on their faces.
Yeah. This is a real peacekeeper here. He's going to blow.
Can somebody run out, since we mentioned that, and like grab those off the table by broadcast studio? Yeah, that's great. Man, I tell you, time is just boiling past us here. Continue with other points you had on your mind, but I want to get into the shooting now and how that ties into mind control.
Okay, well, they take these little children, and at 18 months is where they split the mind. They create MPD, which is now in the DSM-4 and later. They've started calling it DID. Dissociative Identity Disorder. The mind splits. It's a natural function. If you look at cattle out in a field during a blizzard, they'll have their rear ends towards the storm, and they'll be sitting there with a dissociative look, you know, like that. It's a natural ability of the brain, but they manipulate the abilities of the brain and shatter the mind through the trauma. And originally their bloodlines really had the DNA and the ability to create MPD when they traumatized. But since they've been working at traumatizing all of us in general, I mean, you turn on the evening news and they tell you, good evening, and then they proceed to tell you all the reasons why it's not a good evening, you know. Well, there's a reason why they're traumatizing us. And, like you were saying, when we're watching the television, we're getting into our alpha state. There are reasons why they're getting us into those states of mind. And those are the states of mind that they use for the programming. And they also have drugs. They use electroshock. They use drugs. They use deception. They use films that are coming out of Hollywood. And they've got certain very important themes that I wanted to share with the audience, because if they do happen to read this material, they're going to start getting all of the little details that they can see all around them. But just two real simple programming scripts that they use a lot is Alice in Wonderland and Wizard of Oz. I've been sitting in churches listening to Bible-based sermons, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, the minister's talking about the Wizard of Oz, saying something from the Wizard of Oz. That's totally incongruous to his whole train of thought. He just slips it in. What's that all about? It's this programming. Those are programming scripts.
And the general public is having their minds prepared with an overall basic programming to get into the deeper programming. And a lot of people that are actually engaged in more programming, they're so programmed, they're just repeaters repeating as well. And generally, the public is being moved more and more into this unconscious state.
Right, right. That's part of the externalization of the hierarchy, too. They're pulling the general public towards their total mind control that they used to be doing just with their members. World War II was used to take the trauma to a scientific level. One of the major reasons why they had the concentration camps was Mengele had to work out the very detailed specifics on how much trauma you could give to a person of a specific weight, a sex.
And that was admitted. That's why they brought him and Klaus Barbie and others that David Dewhurst, running for Senate here in Austin, worked with. He's very proud of that. Literally, Klaus Barbie down in South America. They brought him over here and then implemented all that here because they had important data.
Right. And so So Mengele learned these. He put it on a scientific basis. So in the 1950s, they were perfecting this total mind control on a scientific basis with individuals. In the 1960s, you'll start seeing cults like the Jim Jones cult and other cults that were being used by them using their front organizations like the CIA. They started using those smaller cults to perfect using mind control with small groups. And then from the 60s into the 70s, they started working towards controlling entire nations. So they just kept progressing to larger groups with more sophisticated mind control.
And that's why you talk to somebody about the New World Order. They get a glazed look. They've been pre-programmed.
Yeah.
But something's happening. People are either really waking up and breaking the programming, because I've made the point, we're actually doing an article for an upcoming magazine I'm going to put out titled, We Are Mind Control. This culture is mind control. The U.S. exports mind control. And where are we in the battle? Because I see huge awakenings happening. I see the globalists as being pretty freaked out right now. So they're accelerating their program that was behind and trying to hurry up and flip things upside down right now in an attempt to just make us become, basically catatonic or go into a learned helplessness phase. But I don't see that working very well for them. I mean, they staged that shooting, Fritz, and I want you to talk about that. If you agree with me, it has the telltale signs. And the poll numbers went up for guns. And they're really freaking out that their public trauma-based mind control freak-out videos aren't working anymore. People know not to trust these people.
Well, that's great. And the analogy to that is if you're in a dark room and you light a little match, that little match's light lights up the entire room. So efforts by little people like myself and you go a long ways. And there's several things that have given the common person tremendous power, and that's the internet, and that's the photocopy machine. And so we're able to disseminate information outside of the controlled media.
And Cass Sunstein at the White House admits that that's happening. So he says flood the alternative media with disinfo and infighting.
Exactly. That's what they're trying to do, too. That's why I encourage people not to get into the infighting. People are always trying to, sending me emails, trying to get me to infight with other people. Like, they would like me to be against you and so forth. And that's counterproductive.
Well, that's always a telltale sign.
Let's see. Where else shall
I? We were getting into the shooting. I mean, break down the shooting in Colorado.
Well, James is clearly dissociative, and that's a real sign of mind control.
Yeah, he can't even talk. At the last three court appearances, he's out of his mind. They go, we're not going to discuss his Air Force psychiatrist that was the head of psychiatry at one of the biggest bases in the U.S., and then just moved to be his little helper. We're not going to discuss any of that. He's there drooling in the meetings. Clearly, textbook.
Right.
Out of his mind. Totally mind wiped. Can't even talk. But that's okay. Because he did it because we say so.
Right. And then another clue is his family and things about him that are red flags. One of the things that they do with the mind control is they have learned how to, like, for instance, do brainstem scarring. It's working off of the same principle as those of us who work out in the gym, we tear our muscles down and the body rebuilds it stronger. Well, for the little child, they scar the brainstem and the body rebuilds it so that the person gets a photographic memory, which is similar to eidetic memory. They have their little methods for trying to enhance the intelligence of these people. You look at his father was very intelligent, and his father was associated with the types of things that are connected to this mind control, you know, like DARPA. And
then his son's in a DARPA program, DARPA funded with a special helper.
Right. So these are red flags. And fortunately, a lot of people are now asking the right kind of questions. They're just not sitting there and taking the official explanation. But I would warn anybody who was an eyewitness to this shooting, who saw something out of the ordinary, just to be very cautious about who you tell it to, because just like in the Kennedy assassination and 9/11, witnesses start disappearing.
Well, take Sirhan. The LAPD, the coroner, said he didn't shoot him. Witnesses said his arm was held down. The guy behind him shot him, different caliber. Turned out the CIA was there that day. Sirhan was drugged. I mean, that's come out now.
Yeah, he was definitely an example of how mind control is used to create an assassin.
But a lot of times I found they just have some drugged up guy, doesn't know who they are. Mm-hmm. They just roll out who takes the fall.
Right.
You've got other, and the people were saying smoke bombs from both sides. They thought there were multiple men, looked like, you know, police
right.
type outfits. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So we have witnesses saying that, there were other people involved. He was watching for someone. And, so those are clues that we're not getting the full story.
I also saw the New York commissioner come out 2 days after and say, there's a man, red hair. Yes, he's after Batman. And I saw the transcript on CBS News. I didn't think it was real. I thought it was some kind of joke. It was because they were like blurring Batman, you know, in Gotham City with this. And I went and found the video. And sure enough, you can just see it's all a big, it's like a holiday to them. They're blurring Batman and the Joker with all of this. And it's like, well, don't worry, we'll be at theaters looking for the Joker. And then in the film, the cops are the heroes. I mean, I tell you, this is a new level.
At the Rocky Vista University at the same time, same general time period that this happened, they were having a mock event to train. You were probably aware of that. So, like you were saying earlier, they'll show these things ahead of time. Okay, this is what we're going to do, and we can, you know.
7/7, they had drills, the exact same train and bus, hit at the exact same time, exact same location. And then they went on TV and said, it's very interesting. Peter Powers, advisor consultant, said, we were running a drill at the exact same targets, exact same location, exact same time. It's extraordinary.
So they always like to tell us.
Yeah.
We've seen this before. Again, we're following a script.
And that follows the psychology of psychopaths. How they'll start calling the cops, sending them letters. I'm going to strike again. You can't stop me. Who's the guy in the Midwest who turned out to be like a government official who was killing everybody?
Oh, you mean Bundy?
No. There was another guy a few years ago. I forget the name of it. He was a government official. He was killing a bunch of people. And he would taunt the police.
No, the
point is they just do this over and over again.
Right. Right, so you start seeing these patterns, and that's what I want people to start becoming aware of, is seeing these patterns, seeing the clues. If they happen to get this information that I have on the mind control, they're going to, once they learn how it operates, what the programming scripts are, and how these people act, you know, if you're around somebody and they can't remember their childhood and they have inconsistent behavior, like maybe they're a Christian, but one in the next hour they're cussing.
That would mean I'm under mind control then.
No, you're not that inconsistent.
If I hit my finger with a hammer, you're going to hear some pretty bad stuff.
you're going to start seeing this all around you. And a lot of people have approached me or called me and thanked me for this information on the mind control because it explained what they had been around their entire life, or probably now, I'm having about two a week that people that have been subjected to this kind of mind control contacting me begging for help. Unfortunately, I'm not in a position to help because these kind of people need a safe place. I don't have a safe place to offer anyone.
Expanding on that, how do you differentiate? Because, I mean, I know there's a lot of these real programs. There's a lot of, you know, secret testing that goes on. But then there's also people from the chemicals and things. Most schizophrenia they found is chemical-based. But there are a lot of people who are schizophrenic, and they're imagining these things. These are real programs. They've come out in Congress. I mean, incredible, you know, giant programs like Ewing Cameron's, thousands of children grabbed, you name it. I mean, that's all admitted, so we know this is happening. Psychiatry itself is a predatory system more and more, where the Sergeant Bales, who supposedly killed 19 people in Afghanistan, had part of his foot blown off. They put him on Prozac. He doesn't want to go back. They send him out. You know, who knows what that really was, where he kills them and burns the children and all this. These drugs do that. I mean, they put you in this very suggestible place where you can have these psychotic breaks. But how do you differentiate who is genuinely mentally ill versus someone who's been programmed? Because, I mean, the programming, I've seen what's been declassified. It's the Air Force, DARPA. They do this to their own kids.
Right.
And really, it's just perverts that go to the next level of mind control. You know, Sandusky was doing mind control type stuff.
Unfortunately, the very first thing that they do to these children is to create a psychotic break. So what we've had going on for thousands of years is insanity breeding insanity.
And sure, the elite's interbred that creates insanity. They've had syphilitic brain infections.
Well,
so the elite themselves are insane.
Yeah, and then their programming makes them insane.
So and then they want to make us like them. They're changing the environment to an inbred syphilitic brain.
So
have you looked into that?
No, not really, but talk about that. When you mean they're creating a syphilitic...
Well, I mean, you've got all this inbreeding that in any mammal species creates aggression, paranoia, insanity. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, the royalty, you know, most of the Egyptian dynasties were living about 14 years old and couldn't walk because they were inbreed, you know, they were God.
Right.
The globalists interbred again through royalty. They interbred again in a Darwin study, you know, with five families that created just monsters. So the elites are hyper-predatory, which allows them to do these bad things. They see that as survival of the fittest, social Darwinism. No, really, they're a cancer malfunctioning.
Right.
But then if you add compounded syphilis throughout every, you know, major ancient civilization right through to today, the elites were all having tons of sex, didn't understand that they had, you know, the brain infections, microscopic worms eating their brain. You know, Jack the Ripper was the prince out hacking people up because he was insane. Makes, you know, so I'm saying inbreeding and then chronic syphilis across the board, that is from my own sociology, anthropology research, that is what constructed, because every ancient society had syphilitic inbred leaders, so that's why they all ended up like Nero dressing up as a werewolf at public parties, having a child chained up that he'd ripped the throat out of with blood spraying all over him. I mean, that really went on. That was, you know, he was quite big at public parties where he did that. So my point is, that's what inbred syphilitic brains do. So this manifestation is my inbred syphilitic brain, not even so much theory, but equation.
And then what takes it to a new level is when you're turning that person into a multiple personality, all of the junk, all of the satanic stuff, it can be hidden back in the back. And what they do is they create a good front. And so you look at the man, Huntington Russell, who created the Skull and Bone Society, highly respected. They have excellent fronts. They have the power to give these people the best education, to give them awards, blah, blah, blah. And they build them up, and that the front that the public sees is impeccable. It looks really good. But if you were to live with that person, you would start to find out that there's another side to them. But as far as the public's image, a lot of these people have impeccable public images. I'm just telling the audience that there's more to these people than meets the eye.
And we're looking at one of the Rothschilds right there, who always is out wearing goat's heads around her neck. Nice person.
There we go.
I forget which Rothschild. That's the one who lives out in California. What's her name? A little devil around her neck. John Bound. Yeah, that's Philippine Rothschild.
Yeah, Baroness.
Baroness.
Yeah.
Oh, she looks nice.
Yeah, I was, I as a tourist, I was at their winery, their mansion, and the people that worked there definitely appeared to me like they were under this total mind control. They were robotic.
Kind of Renfield types. All right, Fritz, other points you'd like to make, other points, you know, directions you'd like to go in that I haven't raised.
Wow. Just, I guess, as normal, I try to give people hope, encourage them. I mean, I don't have all the answers. You don't have all the answers. But what concerns me is people hear this kind of information from you and I, and they shut down. It's too much for them. And yet, I would just say, look, when you go and play a basketball game, you don't shut your eyes and put your hands over your ears. When you're playing a game against your opponent, you're going in with all your senses alert. We're in a war. People may not like to acknowledge that, but we're in a war. And they need, like you're saying, InfoWars, but it's a war that's even more of a struggle. We're fighting for the survival of the human race. We're fighting for the children. We're fighting for all of these things. And people need to come out of their denial. And they need, and how, what will cause them to want to listen to this? They have to realize that there is hope. I mean, look at me. Look at what happened to me, and I'm still here. You know? I just want to encourage people to move forward in a positive direction and not cower down.
They're only able to do what they do because, as you were saying, we're not conscious. People think it's an attribute to not be involved and be uninformed. No, the people perish for lack of knowledge.
Exactly. Exactly. So start becoming informed. See all this stuff around you. And people are standing up at all levels. It may be, it may mean just going to the PTA meeting, you know. But do your part. And all of us, if we take care of our own backyard, are going to have the solution. As a group, we will have the solution.
I think a big part,
we don't have the solution.
I think a big part of the solution is recognizing, you can debate how deep it goes, how evil they are, but the admissions of, they know DU will kill troops, but they authorized it 20 years ago for use, or 22 years ago. The UN has been caught kidnapping kids by the hundreds of thousands a decade, you know, all over the world. This is not debatable. All these elites admit they're into the occult. They're doing all sorts of horrible things. They are putting cancer viruses in the vaccines. They know fluoride's brain damaging us. Harvard just came out and reviewed over 12 studies and said, yeah, it is brain damaging people. But let's continue. I mean, it's like so much of it now is just in our face. The bankers have now been announcing all over the news that they've conquered the U.S., that it's a world government by the bankers. I mean, they're really flaunting it, and I see them doing that because they tried to keep this hidden. They wanted to have revelation of the method slowly. But all the evidence I see is that they're not all powerful. They're in trouble. That's and right. Even a lot of their own minions and people that aren't completely programmed are coming out of it. And we're even seeing rebellions within the power structure itself.
Right. Evil contains the seed of its own destruction. And also, you can see that God has kind of a subtle humor because for hundreds of years, they had targeted the date 2000 is when Lucifer was to be enthroned. And 2000 came, and he didn't get enthroned at that.
And they didn't cap the pyramid. They were going to put a cap on it. They had these weird Illuminati rituals on PBS on, you know, the year 2000 that wasn't the new millennium, but it was their date. I mean, that was so incredible. And they said, we're not done. And I saw some French rock band in English going, come Lucifer, on television.
Exactly. So their plans didn't come to fruition like they, and for me, that was like God subtly giving them a hint. Hey, you are not God Almighty, and your plans can go astray. and giving them a second chance to think about what's really going on, the bigger picture. And so just be encouraged that things are under control. God's still on his throne. And, you know, as the song says, we serve a mighty God. And there is power to do good. There is power to do what's right. And that's where real freedom comes from, is when we step out and do what's right.
That's right. You don't know how much power good's got until you step forward. Since you mentioned these...
Yes, let's show the
you audience. Go to the toy store now. It's hard to find something where it's the U.S. military. World Peacekeeper, since you mentioned that, we'll show people maybe a close shot of that. And my children actually got this out of the exhibit area and took one of the men out. But look, they all have these ugly... Here, we'll lay them all right here and then get document cam shots up here. Let me sit. Thank you. Good job. Look at the ugly looks on their faces. Police and military heroes set. And they all look angry. And but you know what? They're world heroes, though. Look at the face right there. He's like, "Ugh." That's like the TSA. "Hey, I'm going to stick my hands down your pants." Yeah. Look at this guy. They're all like, "Yeah." I mean, look, they all make him look evil and crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, look at this guy. He's got like a... You know, one of the guys got a face like this. "I'm the good guy." He's like, "Hi, we're the good guys. World Peacekeepers. Ah." Here, show him that one right there. The World Peacekeeper. Oh, look at him. Only the UN will have the guns. In closing, what about churches? What about what's going on? I mean, because I try to go to churches, Baptist, you name it, and they'll even have a good sermon. The people are, you know, have a good, you know, Christian vibe, or nice families, but then the whole thing breaks into do what government says, worship the government, which is coming down from their seminary, coming down from the national level. People should know this is not, you know, a Christian doctrine. And so people get turned away from Christ because they see these counterfeits. But then the counterfeits are so good, a lot of the preachers even believe what they're saying.
Yeah, in an earlier book, my Be Wise as Serpents book, I documented who started a lot of these denominations and who's controlling them and who's controlling Christian education. And it's shocking. A large share of these denominations were created by Freemasons, are controlled by Freemasons, are skull and boners, and Freemasons are running Christian higher education. I was sending my son to a Christian school. And in 1990, I went to pick him up at school, and something was wrong. I started asking questions and discovered that the Christian teacher was having the students spy on their parents and write diaries secretly every day. The parents were not informed of
that. Oh, that's done nationwide under law enforcement grants, yeah.
Yeah, and I asked her, "Who told you to do this?" And she said, "Well, I was trained in the university, at Mammoth, the teacher's college there, to do this." So our Christian teachers are having to go to the secular world to get certified, and they're being trained to do this kind of
thing. Oh, no. They have grants where you do it on a computer now, and the feds are in it, and you write about mommy and daddy. I mean, it's just now they're inoculating children without authorization. In California, other areas, I mean, they really are monsters.
Exactly. So they always create boogeyman for us to think that the enemy's out there. Look out here, they're going to distract us. That's part of magic. You know, when you're doing a magic trick, what you're really doing is over here, but you wave your hand over here to distract the people. So watch out. They're always going to give us a boogeyman, but that's not the real boogeyman.
And I think we're so dumb, they're now in the London Guardian going, "Al-Qaeda is really helping." No, I'm not kidding. There was an article today. In fact, I have it right here. I'll dig it out. They saying, "You know what? Al-Qaeda's pretty darn good. You know, these are nice people."
And people just go lock, stock. They just walk along with it, you know. One day somebody's our enemy. The next day they're our friend. And people have shut off their critical thinking. They need to start taking responsibility for their own lives and start thinking for themselves.
All right. If it's the last article in the stack, I'm going to be amazed here. Guys, for some reason it's not in here. It's linked on InfoWars and Drudge. Just type in Al-Qaeda winning the fight in Syria. Click news. It's something like Al-Qaeda winning the fight in Syria. Oh, here it is. Look, it's the one that I had right there. Look at that. Here, show folks a document cam of that. Al-Qaeda turns the tide for rebels in battle. Oh, and it's like their incredible discipline and stylishness is helping. Well, hey, you know, give your rights up. We got to stick our hands down your pants. Look at TSA. I mean, is that not pedophile training? Training the kids that they can be touched by people?
Right. And I've noticed how they've made things that were socially unacceptable before, like tattoos, now universally not only acceptable, but you have old ladies, you know, wanting to get tattoos. The next thing I'm wondering that they're going to somehow get us to accept is pedophilia. And if they could get us to accept some of the things that we've accepted in my lifetime, I have no doubt that people will go along.
Oh, no. In the NDAA, it says the troops can have their own animals on base. I'm not joking. Guys, type in NDAA legalizes bestiality on base. And pigs, you name it. It's a new thing, yeah. And again, we're weird because we don't find a pig attractive.
Wow.
No, we're the bad people now.
Yeah, we're not moving along in the direction that they want us to.
I ask you this question all the time. Where does it lead? I mean, I know where in their own documents, scientifically, they say once the control grid's in place, they'll release more and more hardcore bioweapons that they always claim they're fighting. And then they'll just finally, they want to kill 99%. They tell their minions 80%, 90%, but, in their deeper textbooks, and I've had them write me and go, how dare you talk bad about Professor Pionk at UT? He only wants to kill 90%. Yeah. All humans should be killed. And you look up the doctor, one of his graduate students years ago, and they're like in a bioweapon laboratory, smiling. They'll show you. Because it's like that raw power in these demon minions. They're just like, we will kill everyone. When Dr. Pianca, just one case, he got national attention, like one of the heads over at UT down the street, University of Texas. He was at the Texas Academy of Sciences, got an award, he gets them all over the world, and he projected red skulls on the walls. This is in the news. And he said, soon 90% will die, I'm not happy my family has to die, but it's for the earth. Soon the airborne will come, and it was a standing ovation with tears with the scientist. And it's just like this, we're gonna murder, just like, oh, death. It's like this power thing that's going, death, I mean, they just, and like a normal person just wants life. It's like, I don't like that too much. I mean, what is that?
Yeah, and I've witnessed some of these people referring to the rest of us as useless eaters, not even realizing that, really, what are they contributing? They're parasites.
And they don't even care. Pianca says, I will be killed by them. But, it needs to happen. So he at least understands that. But, I mean, what is a standing ovation about killing Earth and killing the, killing the humans? Everyone's just like, I mean, it was reported in the news, three-minute standing ovation, either with tears. She's like, kill us. I mean, what is that?
It's insanity. It's a demonic, satanic agenda where the human race is hated. And you see that.
So they're basically being influenced by.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I.
What do you think about what David Icke says?
Well, I don't go there. I'll let him do his thing, and I prefer to stay with things that are 3D, that are provable and factual.
But we are on a planet hurtling through space. The sky's the limit. I mean, who knows?
Who knows? He believes in what he's putting out. I think he's sincere. I haven't seen the proof of what he's saying, so I have backed off from.
Well, I mean, exactly. They admit there's a brainwashing camp within Camp X-Ray. They just admit it, where they torture people, and then those guys go out into the news, suicide bombers.
Yeah.
It's like, the graduates from there.
Right.
And they admitted in stuff that they, I can't even say the stuff they do on air. They dress up like devils. They put the guys on hallucinogens. They have prostitutes come in and rape the men. While putting blood all over them. I mean, this was in the news. Abu Ghraib, they admitted that they ordered the troops and they hired jail guards that have been, kicked out in the U.S. to rape the children, but with battery acid. And whenever I say this, people go look it up. Just type in Abu Ghraib Army Report and you get it. And it's in there. Raping kids, battery acid, you know, I can't even mention. Yeah. I mean, it's like, what? You're like, really? And, but then Jack Bauer sometimes tortures a kid to get the dad to talk, but it saves the LA from the nuke. So see, on 24, it's saving people. So, but I mean, like, they're literally, and for the average person that watches these shows, they're like rooting for the good guys who are now the bad guys.
Exactly.
They're like, but it's only Al-Qaeda's kids we torture. But Al-Qaeda was never even there. Al-Qaeda works for you.
Right.
I mean, it's all just like a puppet they bring out, and they go, here's the Al-Qaeda man. And we go, ooh, Al-Qaeda.
Exactly.
What do you make of that?
Yeah, well, you're right on track. I've said buzzwords and watch people robotically start spouting off a bunch of words. You know, they've been preconditioned to, you know, neuro-linguistic programming. They've been conditioned that this word means this. You know, they're not even thinking. You know, Osama bin Laden, then they think this. Al-Qaeda, they think this. You know, it's just, you can see it. You can see that they're not even, they're just regurgitating.
And even if you don't call it mind control, but, you know, calling humans social animals as the globalists do, I hear these talk show hosts that I know personally locally who know full well what's going on, but they'll sit there and just play kind of whatever the establishment's saying. They'll just repeat it, and that's what a winner does. Mm-hmm. A winner just repeats, mm-hmm. And so you just become, but no, they're not winners.
Right, exactly. Well, and I've had some people tell me that they are aware of the Illuminati and this world agenda and so forth, but they want to be on the winning side, and they think that the other side's gonna be the winning side.
But that's, again, that's not winning.
No, it isn't. No, it isn't.
Fritz Springmeier, this has been a truly intriguing visit. Did you enjoy seeing your father?
Yes, very much so.
How was he doing?
Well, you know, I like to tell people don't get old. He's going through some of the normal stages of getting old. He's not as mobile as he used to be, but overall, he's still in fairly good shape.
And weren't you telling me your dad was instrumental in part of your awakening, right? I forget the whole story.
No, but other relatives of mine were. His parents were, but my father wasn't.
What did your dad do? Some story you told me. I forget.
My father wanted to help the world by going to third world countries and developing their agriculture, help the world become self-sufficient. So he had his own way of saving the world, his own goals. He's always believed that you should leave the world a better place than what you found it.
That's civilization. That's humanity.
Yeah.
Who was the other family that helped wake you up?
Well, my grandparents were local leaders in the ag movement. And, in fact, my grandmother was on television in Topeka advocating for the farmers. And the farmers during the Carter administration were trying to understand what is going on, who's setting the prices for us, and why can't we make a living, and why is everything going against us? And then they started tracking down who are the decision makers, the string pullers. And that's when they discovered the Council of Foreign Relations, Trilateral Commission, and so forth. And so they were the banksters. So they helped me understand that level. But those are fronts for something even more sinister. So then I've just taken what they helped me learn and taken it to a higher level.
We can debate 20 families, 16, 13. How many super ruler families are there?
Well, they chose the number 13, but within those 13 bloodlines or tribes, there are five powerful families that are an inner circle again, you know, and so.
And then the other families, they've got branches into other families.
Yes, yes. So, right. So,
where would the Bushes be? They're like a minion family, right? Sometimes they have generational minionships.
Yeah, they would not be in the they do have some blood from royalty. So I'm not sure exactly which bloodline they would classify themselves under. They might be classified with that holy bloodline, the royal bloodline that all the aristocrats in Europe have. And if that's the case, if they're identified in the Illuminati with that, they would be actually within that inner circle.
Let's close on this. I haven't reread Bloodlines of Illuminati in a few years, but I mean, I know I can flip it open here, actually, the bibliography, where you talk about they're really a Transylvanian bloodline. They're not even a German bloodline. The Saxe-Coburg-Gotha is known as the House of Windsor. That's their brand name. How did you discover they were really Transylvanians and that they were hanging out there? Because now that's mainstream news.
I just was doing genealogy work because the people that I worked with in the Illuminati were talking about how the British royal family was Illuminati and how important it had been when the Illuminati members when Princess Di had her wedding with Charles, and so I was trying to understand these people better, trying to track down just who are these people. And then, of course, you have a genealogy work in there where I show how 25 American presidents are closely related. I think that's significant. And some charts.
Well, it's like how Obama, it turns out, was related to Cheney and then Bush, and then they're all related to Kerry.
Yeah, exactly. We're yeah.
Trying to find it here. Dracula, where is that? Would it be under Dracula?
There should be something indexed Dracula, yeah. And then, and some people don't believe that Dracula existed. They get upset when they open this book.
But Vlad the Impaler, that's on record.
Right. He was a historical figure, but some people who don't know history think that it was just a fiction of Hollywood.
Yeah. Well, it's amazing. I hope people get the book at InfoWarsShop.com. Support us, support you. Are you glad we got it back in print in a big way?
Yes. And I think a lot of your listeners are, too.
Absolutely. Well, we should look at getting these in print in a cover like this. We need to get those out there, because I read those as well. And it's certainly food for thought for everybody. Fritz Springmeier, thank you so much for spending time with us.
Thank you.
Well, that is a over-hour interview with Fritz Springmeier. We're going to go to break and come back with another guest, George Grayson, if he hasn't canceled on us, because we went a little bit over an hour. Plus, I got this interview started here tonight a little bit late. So let me say bye to Fritz during the break, and then we'll get our next guest on. We'll be right back. I'm Alex Jones with InfoWars.com, and Lord willing, we shall return. Bloodlines Illuminati with Fritz Springmeier, InfoWarsShop.com. Stay with us. Alex Jones here with a very important announcement for truth seekers. We've carried a lot of amazing films and books over the years on the online video bookstore at InfoWars.com. And out of all the titles we've carried, one stands out because it is just so chillingly convincing. And that's Dreams from My Real Father by Joel Gilbert, available at InfoWars.com. This film exposes the fraud that Obama is like nothing I've seen. If you want to know who Obama's real daddy is, this is the film for you. Don't forget, your purchase supports our broadcast and our growing media network. You'll also find at InfoWarsShop.com, None Dare Call a Conspiracy by Gary Allen, the book that woke me up. We're also carrying Behind the Green Mask, UN Agenda 21, by Rosa Corey. This book is coffin nails to the globalist takeover. The Greater Good, the most professional and up-to-date film I've ever seen, exposing the scourge that is vaccines. These titles and a lot more are all available at InfoWarsShop.com. Sick of the globalist eugenicist control freaks adding poison to your water and laughing as you get sick and die? Start purifying your water with ProPure. My friends, I've done a lot of research, and the best gravity filter out there, bar none, is ProPure, and it's available discounted at InfoWars.com. Its filters are silver impregnated to prevent bacterial growth. There's no priming required. It's NSF 42 certified. Optional fluoride filters can reduce fluoride up to 95%. Easy to set up and use. Doesn't
doesn't require electricity. Purify water from lakes, streams, ponds, and wells. This filter system leaves in beneficial minerals, which is key. Save money by not buying bottled water and avoid BPA that leaches from the plastic. ProPure is the best gravity-fed filter out there. It's what my family uses. InfoWars.com already has the lowest price on ProPure. But if you add the promo code WATER at checkout, you get an additional 10% off at InfoWars.com. You can also call to order 888-253-3139.
Thank you for joining us. We are joined by Professor George W. Grayson. He is an author and researcher, a PhD from Johns Hopkins University, and amongst his many laurels. And he's been a professor for several decades at William & Mary. And he is one of the leading experts on the kleptocratic collapse of Mexico that has killed, 60,000 in the last 5-6 years? That is spilling over our border, that is one of the biggest national security threats to this country. And he joins us today to talk about his new book, The Executioner's Men, frightening breakdown of exactly what's happening. The Executioner's Men, Los Zetas, rogue soldiers, criminal entrepreneurs, and the shadow state they created. Something I think our drug war, if it continues, can basically create here, like it's done in New York and Chicago on a mini scale. And Professor George W. Grayson joins us now. Sir, thanks for coming on the broadcast.
The pleasure is completely mine, Alex.
Well, you're one of the leading experts on Mexico. It pops up in the news here and there when the State Department says, don't go there, it's dangerous. Describe for people, start at the beginning. What's happening in Mexico on a timeline? Where are we now? Where do you see it going?
There are enclaves of violence. For example, in the border areas, and I'm talking about south of Texas, you have several cartels, mainly the Gulf Cartel and the Sinaloa Cartel, who have joined to battle Los Zetas. Los Zetas are the most sadistic, fiendish, brutal criminal organizations, at least in the Americas. And one of their standard techniques is decapitation. And I don't know if you could see my friend here.
Yes.
But he, of course, is just a mannequin. But the Zetas have executed through excruciating torture hundreds, if not thousands, of people. And they especially key in on the military. But their goal is to infuse fear in everyone with whom they come into contact, whether it's average citizens, the police, the military, or politicians. The Zetas are in about 21 states, and they go down Mexico's east coast. If you turn to the west coast and look at the state of Sinaloa, that's the headquarters for the Sinaloan cartel, which is, of course, headed by Joaquin Guzman, who typically goes by the name El Chapo. But, Alex, I know you'll have him on your program, and he doesn't like to be called El Chapo because that means the short one. He prefers to be called El Tio, and so I would recommend that salutation for him. The Sinaloa cartel really controls the Pacific Coast area, but they want to get to Nuevo Laredo, which is the major portal for the entry of drugs and other illicit goods into the United States. And that's one reason they're battling Los Zetas in the north.
What are the numbers? Because I see 40,000 in the last 4 or 5 years. I see 60,000. It almost becomes a background weather report, how many hundreds of heads are dumped off on the border every week. I mean, what's the numbers of the carnage we're talking about? And is Mexico officially a failed rogue system, a failed state, a road warrior type scenario?
Well, I use figures from La Reforma newspaper because it's a reputable source, and plus there's consistency in the figures. And what they show today is almost 44,000 drug-related deaths. That may be on the low side, but that's an approximation. But there has been a sharp increase during the Calderon administration. And, of course, Felipe Calderon swore the oath of office on December 1, 2006. And he has really encountered, I think, all the woes of a latter-day biblical Job. There was a flu epidemic. Tourism is way down. The country has suffered natural disasters. And, of course, above all, there is the wanton, brutal torture and killing of civilians and cartel members by the underworld. Mexico is not a failed state in the sense of being a failed country. It's got universities, it's got political parties, banks, financial institutions, and just lots of the elements of a nation state. But there are areas of Mexico, enclaves, much of the state of Michoacan on the west coast where La Familia hangs out, areas in cities such as Ciudad Juarez are unsafe at any speed. And you've also got places like Veracruz, where the last couple of governors have been joined at the hip with the Zetas, and that's a dangerous place. Having said that, I wouldn't hesitate at all to go to Cancun or to other resorts. Mexico City, which I just visited to observe the July 1 presidential election, has become a sanctuary city. And that is, the cartels have their families there. And so while you have gang violence, you don't have the gunfights at the OK Corral that you find in the north or that you find in Veracruz.
So it's almost a demilitarized zone or a Switzerland where they can park their families.
It used to be that there were several Switzerlands. Guadalajara used to be one. Nuevo León, or at least Monterrey, also enjoy that kind of atmosphere. But those cities have turned into war zones, and so now it's probably Mexico City, Mérida, which is in Yucatan, on the Yucatan Peninsula, and also Querétaro, which is about a 2.5-hour bus ride north of Mexico City, which I find to be one of the safest cities in the world.
All right. Now, expanding on this, Mexico's a beautiful, wonderful place, a lot of really neat culture, but then it has this corrupt government and then these drug cartels, you know, basically fouling the whole situation. Again, Professor, you're one of the leading experts on this, so, I mean, don't talk to us like we're 5 years old, but give us some of the basics here, because I'm just, you know, 3 hours away from Mexico, but it seems like a whole another world, even though I've traveled extensively all over it, but it affects us to a great extent. So, break down, why did everything accelerate in its implosion under Felipe Calderon? What do you expect? You were just there for the election. Is there truth in fraud? Break down some of the basic players for us so we can understand what's happening, and then let's get into your newest book.
Well, of course, the major players are the cartels, and we've mentioned the Sinaloa cartel, which is the most powerful. The second at least most brutal cartel are Los Zetas. They're in 21 states. And you have the Gulf cartel, which is focused in Matamoros and Tamaulipas in the north. There are a half dozen other cartels, but they are the major ones. Now, the PRI, the Institutional Revolutionary Party, governed Mexico like its fiefdom for 71 years. And finally lost power to the National Action Party on in July of 2000. Under the old PRI, there was a informal deal that had been struck with the capos. The mafiosi would pay rich rewards to governments at the local, state, and national level. And, of course, the PRI had corrupted all of society, and it also corrupted the drug business. In return for this, these monies, the cartels followed certain rules of the game. They didn't sell drugs in Mexico. They didn't kidnap civilians. They didn't get armaments that were more powerful than those of the army. If they had to kill someone, they did it in a remote area. And in general, they paid respect to governors and mayors, and there are plenty of instances where these elected officials hobnobbed with the kingpins. That lasted until really the late 1980s, early 1990s, when there was a convergence of three factors. First of all, the U.S. authorities were successful in interdicting the flow of narcotics into Florida and the southeast of the United States. And so the Colombians and, to a lesser extent, the Peruvians had to find new routes to get to that big nose in El Norte, namely the United States. And therefore, they moved through Central America and through Mexico. And the upshot was what had formerly been a multi-million dollar business became a multi-billion dollar business. The second thing that happened was that, as I mentioned, the National Action Party, or the PAN, took over the presidency. And the first PAN president was Vicente Fox, who was an excellent campaigner, but it turned out he couldn't organize a one-car funeral. He didn't like having shadowy groups from Mexico City enforce the rules of the game, because if the capos broke those informal rules that I mentioned earlier, the army or certain brigades or the federal judicial police would come down on them like a ton of bricks. Fox thought it was better to use better trained, better compensated, more technologically efficient local police. And the problem with that, as you've often discussed,
they got bought off.
They quickly got bought off. And finally, NAFTA, although a godsend for the macroeconomy in Mexico, greatly increased the flow of goods and services, and among those goods and services were drugs and weapons.
Wow. Now, obviously, the elements of the CIA have been caught bringing drugs in to fund covert operations before. We've seen all these Mexican officials in the news saying, stop saying our officials are corrupt. You've got plenty of them, too. And we've seen all the cases of local police, feds, you name it, involved. But again, we got CIA people like Dewhurst running for Senate here in Texas. He's saying he's going to shut the border down. We've got all these forces. I talked to Sally Castile, who was a DEA agent 6 years ago, and he said groups are being funded in Mexico. There's going to be a Western-backed or U.S.-backed destabilization campaign. From your research, how does the United States and drug policy and corruption here, Professor, feed into the witch's brew that's been unleashed in Mexico?
Well, some U.S. officials have drunk that witch's brew. There's just so much money floating around in it, to mix metaphors, that you are going to have members of our security services who are corrupted. But what you have in Mexico is a culture of corruption where you can't swing a dead cat without hitting a corrupt official. And what's happened, and this will be hard for you to believe, Alex, but there's deadlock in Mexico between Congress and the executive branch of government, something that would never happen in this country. And the result has been the vacuum of power has been filled by Mexico's 31 governors and also the mayor of Mexico City. And so many of these governors either turn a blind eye to the narco trafficking that goes on in their states, or they are complicit in the criminal activities. And so certainly we who live in glass houses can't throw stones, but I don't see any conspiracy to overthrow Mexico because I don't think we would want to shoulder the tens of millions of impoverished people there who don't get a fair shake from their own government.
Now, to I guess expand on that question, Professor, I was told there was a destabilization program. Then we saw Mexico become destabilized. What is, then, from the best your research is, I know it changes administration administration somewhat, what is the real U.S. policy to Mexico? Because I've heard Mexico, you know, some of their leaders say, well, let's decriminalize. And, of course, you know, the United States that enjoys, you know, running the drug war is like, no, 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 let's not do that, because that's the pretext for all this control. I mean, what is the U.S. relationship, then, to make it, you know, to put bookends on it? And where do you see Mexico going from here?
The best the U.S. can do is to help at the margins. That is, we can provide training, equipment, intelligence, but it's up to Mexico's elite to really commit themselves to fighting organized crime. That's what we found in Colombia. For years, perhaps decades, the nomenclatura there lived cocooned from the cartel mayhem. And then the Medellin cartel began to move from just criminal activities to absolute terrorism, killing presidential candidates, shooting airplanes out of the sky, bombing shopping centers. At that point, the elite realized that they had a dog in the fight, and they began to cooperate not only with their own law enforcement agencies and their army, but also with the U.S. government. And that made a huge difference in Colombia, where the cities are now safe. Having said that, there's probably more cocaine flowing from Colombia than ever before, but there's only so much the U.S. can do to try to abate the violence.
Sure.
And to
Professor,
the
then, what kicked, I mean, I understand you're saying that some of their drug routes got blocked in Florida, and that Vicente Fox screwed things up because, you know, he took the army off the job and put local police on it. But, I mean, what are the main factors? I mean, what made Mexico so bad? And on a scale here, if we were looking at a timeline and things were getting worse in the mid-90s right through to today, is Mexico getting better or worse, or is there no way to try to, you know, gauge what's happening?
Well, first of all, there, you and I are both creatures of the Enlightenment, so we think if there's a problem, it can be solved. There may just be some insoluble problems. And even if, say, the Virgin of Guadalupe reappeared and the drug trafficking ended tomorrow, you still have an infrastructure of criminal organizations who have weapons, who've got safe houses, who've got the know-how to extort, to capture, and to kill. So in general, I'm optimistic as a human being, but I'm really pessimistic about Mexico's future, especially because of the increasingly important role that these governors are playing.
So are you hinting at it's almost like warlords, it's breaking up into many states?
No, Mexico is not fragmenting. The Mexican population is quite conservative when you get outside of Mexico City. All I'm saying is that the governors run their states like they were baronies in the feudal ages, and they have little or no accountability. Some of the states are thriving. Mexico's gross domestic product will grow twice the rate of the U.S. Similar product. Mexico has an all-time high in foreign reserves. Investment is moving in. So it's not a failed state, but there are a lot of failed politicians.
And sure, when you make the point, because I've always been for drug decriminalization, because I realize it injects money into it, it makes it sexy. I'm not saying legalize it, but control it, you know, like prescription drugs or whatever. And I know some areas of Europe have done that. I want your view on decriminalization. You may disagree, and that's fine. I want you to elaborate. But I do get the point that once you have a state so based on a crime, so based on hundreds of billions a year, that it is horrifying. If they've branched out into kidnapping and terrorism and extortion and everything else and blowing up, you know, casinos or whatever, what would happen if you decriminalized everything? How many drug enforcers and pushers and minions are there in Mexico?
Well, it's a relatively small number. Los Zetas, for example, have, I would think, fewer than 1,000 cadres. However, they've got couriers, they've got gunmen, they've got lookouts. The Sinaloa cartel is probably larger because it has it employs so many people in marijuana and poppy production. But the country's major problems really are related more to its oil industry because it's running out of oil, and oil accounts for about a third of its national budget. And if it doesn't find new reserves of oil, its now growing economy is going to suffer a setback. And so I think macroeconomic management is crucial, but as we have both agreed, even if the cartels stopped narco-trafficking tomorrow, you still have this infrastructure of criminal activity that's going to continue into the future.
Professor George W. Grayson is our guest here. We're going to talk about his new book here in a moment. Professor, then what would you do? Because you've been down there a lot. You just came back. You study it. You make this your life. What would you do then? Or what are some of the brighter minds in Mexico saying? Because, or is it just this is just going to continue degenerating and we just hope everything turns out all right?
Well, Alex, you flatter me because I have to say the more I read about Mexico, the less that I know. But what Calderon has done is to use the broadsword. That is throwing major military movements against the cartels. And the army is taught to pursue, to capture, and to kill. And so there is going to be invariably what the Pentagon calls collateral damage. And the army's corruption has increased, and the number of human rights violations has grown vertiginously. I think that the next president will have to rely less on the broadsword and more on the scalpel. That is electronic eavesdropping, informants, the use of drones, following the money, not allowing for cash transactions to take place so easily in Mexico. But above all, Mexico's elite, which now lives behind high walls with state-of-the-art technology, skilled drivers, they send their youngsters to the United States for education. Mexico's elite has got to commit itself to fighting organized crime.
Now, you know, getting back to this issue of drones, I know it's a lot of money every year the U.S. is sending down there, and this whole mission creep, that's why I'm for decriminalization. I don't want this giant military buildup, not just in Mexico, but what I've seen here, because it invariably, instead of the Mexican gang shaking you down, government just shakes you down, you know, with taxes and regulations. So if you had to look into your crystal ball, where do you see this going? Because I see it spilling over. I see the culture of corruption infiltrating every level of U.S. society, merging with the Chicago, New York model. I mean, I see this whole North American Union thing and this whole security perimeter basically not uplifting Mexico, but dragging down North America, the rest of North America. What's your take on that?
Well, first, I didn't mean to dodge your earlier question. I, too, support decriminalization. I think it's the least worst option to pursue. And I think in 20 years we will see that occurring throughout North America, although it's a slow process. The cartels are pragmatic. And while they're certainly selling drugs in at least 48 of the 50 states in the U.S., they haven't been targeting U.S. officials per se. And it's not because they're altruistic. It's that they don't want Mexico to move any closer to the center of Washington's radar screen than it currently is. That is the last thing that the cartels want, and also the last thing that Mexico's armed forces want, are U.S. boots on the ground in Mexico. And so, by and large...
Yeah, because if U.S. boots show up, they never leave. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I'm not sure that either presidential candidate wants to get us involved in a new war that's, you know, that's end game has yet to be spelled out.
Sure, but you're saying that the cartels don't want to drive the Mexican elite into the arms of the U.S. elite, basically. Well, that's an amazing statement, though. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. It's they're not killing U.S. officials because they're even scared of them. They're just afraid that it would drive the two elites together, or like, I mean, I interrupted. Exactly what are you getting at?
Well, there are two separate groups here. One, we have the possibility that you could have a U.S. armed presence at the border, as we've had in the past with National Guard units. But what the Mexican crime syndicates don't want are U.S. boots on the ground, either as trainers or as active participants in the local version of the drug war. That is, they don't want Mexico to become Colombianized. The elites live in their own world. They're the kind of people, take for example the head of the teachers union, Elba Esther Gordillo. She's amazingly wealthy. If she sees a cocktail dress in a copy of Vogue magazine, she will send a union airplane to Paris because they have mannequins of her body dimensions, and she will have that union plane bring back the cocktail dress so she can wear it at an upcoming event. That is, there is a style of life that is just beyond our, or at least beyond my comprehension. I know star radio personalities live in
I'm not a star radio personality, but I do know a lot of famous Hollywood people, and they don't live like that. I mean, only people like David Rockefeller gets to Europe and forgets he had a bottle of wine and sends his jet back to get it. So I get it. They live in just, you know, I was reading, doesn't Mexico have more billionaires than the U.S. per capita? I mean, not more total, but per capita?
I frankly don't know. Because for better or for worse, I don't rub elbows with the billionaires. It does have the lion's share in Latin America, and many of these men and women started off as entrepreneurs, but they made their millions that way. They made their billions through sweetheart arrangements with the government.
I was about to say, it's that whole crony monopoly model that it seems like the U.S. is more and more adopting has been the model in Latin America.
Well, the crony capitalism in Mexico is very much akin to the crony capitalism that existed in the late 19th century during the Gilded Age in the United States.
The robber barons.
The robber barons, because the senators that they didn't buy, they rented. And with the United Citizens case saying that certain groups can give unlimited amounts of money without disclosing their donors, we run the risk of a new Gilded Age in the United States.
Well, I agree with that. Well, Professor, I've been asking a lot of the questions here, but your new book, I mean, it's got some scary characters on the front, and I've seen some of these guys. Is it drugs? Is it programming? I mean, they've got these young enforcers that are just, you know, they worship the Grim Reaper. You know, one crew I know worships a female Grim Reaper, the skinny one. The others worship a male Grim Reaper. I mean, how are they getting young people to just be ready to murder and kill and do things that we didn't really see in Mexico before? I mean, there was, you know, more of that, you know, culture of, you know, don't kill women, don't kill kids. It seems like it's just gone to hell in a handbasket. Break down your book, The Executioner's Men.
Well, the leaders are really sadistic, and they deserve to be in the lowest rungs of hell. I'll give you one brief example. They thought that some street vendors, because the Los Zetas are involved in at least 20 illegal activities, including contraband. They thought some of the street vendors on their payroll were skimming the profits. El Cuarenta, who is the number two personality in Los Zetas, went to their boarding house with some of his thugs. He lined up these poor wretches against the wall, street vendors, and he beat the first one to a bloody pulp with a 2x4. So he was unrecognizable as ever having been a human being. The second one incurred a worse fate because El Cuarenta took a razor-sharp butcher knife, plunged it through his thorax, and pulled out his heart. These leaders just want to be the most feared, the most brutal, the most dangerous criminal organization in the Americas. Because while they don't have a major capacity with regard to drug trafficking, they make a great deal of money from extortion, kidnapping, and even the harvesting of body parts.
Unbelievable. And again, tell us about this alliance, because I know once these wars go on, it's the most evil go to the top, because it is a survival of the most sickening and vicious. But explain to me, because what I've heard from folks who are down in Mexico is, like you said earlier, some of the other cartels have teamed up to try to exterminate the most vicious one.
Yeah, it's the Gulf Cartel and the Sinaloa Cartel who have teamed up against Los Zetas. And by and large, the Sinaloans and the Gulf Cartel leaders are businessmen. They want to import, process, store, and export drugs. They see that as good for the bottom line. Along come the Zetas with their absolutely horrific behavior, and that's bad for business. And so they want to eliminate the Zetas, all the more so because the Zetas control Nuevo Laredo. And as we talked about earlier, that's the major portal to the United States for legal and illegal commerce, and the Sinaloa cartel would love to get control of that particular city. I think then they would probably turn their back on the Gulf cartel, but they would enjoy a much more advantageous passageway to the United States.
How is the war going? Who's winning?
Well, at first, the Zetas were rocked on their heels, and they retreated into southern Tamaulipas, which is the northeast shoulder of Mexico, just below Texas, into Veracruz. And it looked like it might be the end of the Zetas. But all of a sudden, the Zetas showed up in Guadalajara, which had been a Sinaloa bastion, and they even opened hostilities in Sinaloa itself, where El Chapo rules the roost. And so the Zetas can make decisions quickly. They have military discipline because they came out of the Mexican Special Forces. And again, they will use any act of violence conceivable against their foes. So they're now in 21 states. They certainly have penetrated Guatemala, where along with the Sinaloa cartel, they're the major criminal organizations. They're in all through Central America, and they have passageways so that they can get their drugs from Colombia and from Peru.
Wow. Again, I've been asking a lot of the questions here, but in the closing time we have, we got about 5-6 minutes, Professor. Break down your book and what it covers, because I'm going to get it and read it. It looks very interesting. I want to understand this, because I've studied it all the time. And as you said, the more you read, the less you know. Break down the book itself and any angles of recruiting, who's dominant in different areas of the U.S., some of the things that are happening there, and then any other points that I haven't raised for you to answer.
Well, as best I could, because my wife doesn't let me even contemplate trying to interview the Zetas, and she has threatened to tattoo my Social Security number on the bottom of both my feet. So if I get into mischief, she'll be able to identify me. But I look at the organization of the Zetas. I look at their plaza chiefs. I look at their recruitment methods. I look at the dual sovereignty that occurs in some states where you have an elected government, a tax collector, a police chief, a public works director. But parallel to that elected government, you also have a plaza chief. You have the plaza chief's tax collector, whom we might call an extortionist. You have thugs who perform law enforcement functions, and occasionally some of the cartels will engage in public works. And finally, I talk about the Zetanization of Mexico, where rival cartels that used to focus on business deals, such as the Gulf Cartel and the Sinaloa Cartel, are now engaging in atrocities that were once the province of the Zetas. And so you're having El Chapo's cartel beginning to decapitate people. You find that the Gulf Cartel is now moving into extortion. They're all involved in money laundering. They're all involved now in kidnapping. And so the Zetas have set the bar high because they want to be able to go into, let's say, Alex Jones's car dealership and say, you need protection. And for $50,000 a month, we will safeguard your inventory and we won't touch a hair on the head of your employees. They've got credibility, what I call cartel cred, because you know that they won't hesitate to throw a bomb into your establishment or to take one of your family members and slice and dice them and send them back to you day by day in terms of different body parts. So they are setting the agenda for the cartels.
Looking at the Zetatization of Mexico, then, that doesn't bode well for Mexico.
It doesn't bode well. And the main challenge that the next government will have is to try to form a professional, uncorrupted, highly trained police force. And that seems like a will-o'-the-wisp, because even if you take youngsters and put them through rigorous training, look into their backgrounds deeply, pay them more, give them fancy uniforms, give them state-of-the-art weaponry. Once they go into a police precinct, they're likely to find their comandante or senior members of the force who are on the take from one or possibly two cartels. And so it is a absolute Herculean challenge worthy of Hercules to try to create an honest police force. And this is where I think the elite needs to get involved. Quickly, I spoke to a group of business people in Mexico recently, and I said to one of the gentlemen there, you've got five children. One will take over your business. Another will be a lawyer, another an accountant, and so forth. Why don't you encourage one member of your family, one of your youngsters, to go into law enforcement? And they looked at me like I just stepped off the moon. And, of course, a lot of people do that. But the thought of having one of your children in law enforcement is just abhorrent because of the terrible reputation that police have in Mexico.
Wow. Well, I've seen that here in Texas, and it's certainly been good for our economy. All of the middle class, entrepreneurial, but also then rich Mexicans are moving up here, buying businesses, spending their money. And quite frankly, it's good for the Austin, Texas, where I live. You know, nice, smart, hardworking people, businesses, companies, buying stuff, doing stuff. But what about the brain drain? I mean, I've seen that myself. Are you seeing that go on because you've got the larger image of this? I mean, is there the brain drain I see happening?
Well, I talked to a top engineer at Pemex, which is the national oil company. And I said, how's your salary? And he said, well, it's quite good by Mexican standards. And I said, are you content with your life here? And he said, if I had the chance to take a job, say, with a state oil company in Norway or Brazil, I would do it in a heartbeat. That's the bad news. The good news is that there is a growing middle class, and some of whom are committed to staying in their country and trying to improve it. But at the end of the day, there's no way that an average citizen, even a university graduate, can affect incumbent office holders under the system of government that was put together by the PRI during its 71 years in office. And we're more than likely to see a new president from the PRI take office on December 1. And so you have to have a great deal of faith to be an optimist in Mexico these days.
So you're saying the elections, from your research, is not good news for Mexico?
Well, the election, the vote count was fair. That is, the vote count in Mexico is probably more transparent than in the United States because you have only one electoral roll, and you have a virtually uncounterfeitable identification card. And when you go to vote, your picture is next to your name at the polling place. But as in the United States, enormous amounts of money are spent in the run-up to the election. And therefore, it is impossible for new members of the middle class, unless they join one of the political parties, to make a career in politics. And therefore, they prefer to go into business, law, accounting, teaching, and other professions, rather than to get involved with what seems to be a dirty, corrupt political regime.
Do you see these zetization, as you call it, spreading across our border?
I don't, because, again, the Zetas, like the other cartels, are sufficiently pragmatic that they don't want to gain any more attention from official Washington than they now have. And with a campaign underway, both U.S. major party candidates are trying to propitiate Mexico and propitiate Mexican Americans in hopes of winning on the first Tuesday in November. So I don't think the Zetas or the Sinaloans or the leaders of the Gulf cartel want to raise the hackles of policymakers in Washington.
All right, in closing, we've shown some news articles here. I know you've seen them, where Sinaloa people get busted and they say, hey, I was bringing drugs in for the ATF and the FBI, and it ties into Fast and Furious. And the FBI will come in and say, well, it's true, you did work for us, but you're still going to prison. I mean, how much of that is going on? From your research, who is the U.S. government most allied with, or is there manipulation of all the cartels?
I don't think the U.S. government is allied with any cartel, although they do incredibly stupid things like Fast and Furious. What we're finding is that of the several branches of the armed forces, the Navy and the Marines are a part of the Mexican Navy, have proven to be the most confiable or confidence-producing allies. They have a good intelligence network. They don't have the toxic nationalism that the Army harbors. They're cosmopolitan. They're much more middle class than is the Army. And they have been extremely good allies of U.S. security agencies.
I've noticed that. They've been using Marines and Navy in these cross-border excursions. When I've been in Mexico, you'll see Marines and Navy strutting around as security. But then when you take a bus out to see some pyramids 100 miles in, it's Army shaking down the driver who has to demand tips for them. Wow, now that's something I want to understand. Whenever I see troops guarding marijuana fields, it's Army. Briefly, Professor, and then we'll let you know because I know you're busy. From your research, explain the difference in the armed forces, because I noticed the Navy and the Marines are working with the U.S., the Army isn't, and I've noticed the Army shaking people down, not the Navy and Marines. Explain that, too. I mean, how did the cultures, I mean, you called it toxic nationalism. I mean, obviously, the Mexican Army is not too fond of the U.S., I guess, because of wars or what?
Well, there was an unpleasantness in the 19th century that cost Mexico half its territory. We also know that General Don Jack Blackjack Pershing led an expeditionary movement against Pancho Villa during World War One, and so the Army really looks upon the United States with, shall we say, mixed emotions. And they still have lots of hardliners who see the U.S. as still the perpetrators of what's called in Mexican textbooks the War of North American Aggression. The Navy is much less hostile to the U.S., and I think that's because they do less land duty where they can be corrupted. They spend a good part of their time aboard ships where there is control over their activities. They rub elbows with foreign sailors in joint operations in foreign ports. Most naval officers know English or know a second language, and many are married to foreigners. And so it's a more cosmopolitan service. It's more of a middle-class service, and it's a much smaller service, which doesn't mean it can't be eventually contaminated, but so far its record is at least 4 stars, if not 5 stars, compared to the 1 or 2 stars I would have to assign to the Army.
Well, your new book, Professor, I'm going to have to get it. I have, you know, read your other work, but The Executioner's Men, George W. Grayson and Samuel Logan wrote the book with you. And we haven't even gotten into the fact you say you've thought about trying to interview Los Zetas. Have you talked to any of the other drug cartel people?
No. Alex, I may be dumb, but I'm not crazy. And I talk to law enforcement officials, military personnel, journalists, academics. I read everything I can get my hands on.
Oh, hey, listen, you go to Mexico City. I've talked to reporters who had their people kidnapped down there, and you're saying that's safe. You got a lot more courage than I do. I'm not getting anywhere near. I mean, hell, I was down in Mexico a couple of years ago, and the Army shaking down our tour bus cured me of going there. That was not fun. Have you heard of that happening where you're going to look at a, you know, and this was in Yucatan or Yucatan Peninsula. I was going to see some of the pyramids there. I mean, I'd already seen years before Chichen Itza and Tulum and places like that, but we were going to some other ones, and it was a nice tour bus. You know, we stopped there, drives in about 60, 70 miles, the Army just sitting there, and they got the guy off. He was crying when he came back on. He goes, well, I hope you give me tips because they just took all my money. And, I mean, wow, that's just amazing when the Army's even shaking down tour buses.
Well, I haven't had that kind of experience with the Army, but the police have a terrible reputation. Just in the hour and 15-minute drive from Mexico City to Cuernavaca can be a perilous experience because of the state police in Morelos, the state in which Cuernavaca is the capital. They just have a terrible reputation. And if a middle-class professional, a lawyer, were to have his daughter come home and say, Dad, I think I'm going to marry a police comandante, or it might be an Army captain. That would be the same. The father would do somersaults to prevent that wedding from taking place. He would offer her any amount of money he could, or he would put her in a nunnery in Italy because of the bad reputation of the police and also, unfortunately, the growing corruption in the Army.
Yeah, you can see the arrogance in Mexican police eyes. And again, I've seen the Marines and Navy. They were friendly and didn't, you know, took pictures of them and stuff when I've been down there. And I now more and more in areas like New York, Chicago, see that in the eyes of the police here. And it is, I see the same look in North Korean police and soldiers' eyes. It's called tyranny, and it's everything we're fighting. Professor, thank you for all the time. It was great getting you on.
The pleasure was completely mine, Alex. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Wow, folks. Well, that was 2 in-depth interviews tonight here on InfoWars Nightly News. And Lord willing, we'll be back tomorrow night. But that arrogance of a corrupt government with its enforcers that it empowers to basically abuse the people is everything we are fighting here. That's what InfoWars is all about. You are the resistance. We couldn't do any of this without you. This whole operation costs over $5 million a year to run, and I'm so proud of the fact that no taxpayer money goes to it like so much media that's run by banks that get banker bailouts. We don't have the IRS out taking your money, forcing you to support us. You decide to promote InfoWars.com and PrisonPlanet.tv and PrisonPlanet.com and InfoWars.net. You decide to go do the 15-day free trial or then pay $5.95 a month for a membership, which is really six memberships. You decide whether or not you're going to support what we're doing here. And we're risking our lives to bring you this information. I mean, you just heard Fritz Springmeier, where we went deep down the rabbit hole, and then we just, talked to George W. Grayson, who's a prestigious professor researching all of this, and you just saw the whole news portion of the transmission on top of the three-hour radio show. And I'm not whining. I only get mad that I get burnt out by 6 or 7 at night and then can't shoot more videos or do more research because my brain stops working as well. Then I turn into the Kraken if I don't get out of here. But the point is that we need your help, ladies and gentlemen. This is serious. This is serious. Mexico, I've seen the studies, has roughly triple the natural resources the United States has, even though it's about half our geography. And it's a beautiful country. I mean, I wish it was like California or Texas and wasn't totally lawless and dangerous. I wish it was open to, retire down at a place like that. But you just can't do it because corruption has absolutely taken it over. And that same thing where people accept corruption and then they accept more and more and more leads to the point where no business can basically operate unless it's part of the mafia system and society collapses. And that's where America's going. But the globalists are just able to hide it better than they do in Mexico. And it's despicable. We've got to turn this around. Now, obviously, folks, criminal elements within the U.S. government have been shipping guns down there to Los Zetas. They were trained in the U.S. That much is admitted. We told you 6 years ago this was coming before it started, about a year before it started. Now, the question is, did it get out of hand? Who knows? But the globalists have been involved in this day one. You notice the cartel the U.S. elements backed is the one that has the main drug route into Texas, which is the main route into the U.S. now. The other cartels try to use Arizona, but it's a bigger desert. That's what's going on here. And it's destroying the lives of people in Mexico, but also here. And that's the bottom line. Okay, that is it for this extended transmission. As I said, we'll be back on the radio 12 Eastern, 11 a.m. Central, but 12 noon Eastern at InfoWars.com. And there's the free podcast there as well. And also tomorrow night here with InfoWars Nightly News. We're getting 5 to 6 new reporters hired. We just hired 7 new graphics people totally. I said 6, but actually I hired a manager who's a graphics person as well. So we've got a newspaper magazine coming out. I haven't even told you about that yet in detail. That's coming up. That's coming out in September. I am all in. I am just, hit the afterburners, boom, pedal to the metal, push it to the limit. Because to quote Tony Montana, no women, no kids. My whole thing is it's one thing to have elites that sit there and kill other men and do corrupt things. This global thing is run by a bunch of chipmunk-like demonic Sanduskies. And I'm done with it. I mean, I don't want to be a slave. I want to be a real free market, entrepreneur, creative person. I don't want anybody sucking off of me. Let me tell you, they got mafia stuff all over the country in places like Chicago and New York where immigrants came from Eastern Europe and other areas who were used to being shaken down. Now, people got shook down in England and Germany and France, but people had revolutions and chopped off everybody's heads and stuff, so that would stop. See, everything we've got comes from Western Europe because they had wars where millions of people were killed, so you'd have basic liberty. That makes what's going on in Mexico look tame, okay? And so because of the Magna Carta, because of the Renaissance, because believe me, I mean, Europe was even more corrupt than Mexico is right now. This goes through cycles. But the idea of the Renaissance came here, and there was a lot of corruption, but the average person wouldn't put up with it and would kill you if you tried to enslave them. And it's that attitude of don't tread on me that creates a society where we're not all slaves. We're going to end up like Mexico under this new world order, but even worse. It's going to be more high-tech and more organized if we don't turn this around now. And I don't want my children growing up in that. Okay? It's that simple. All right, great job to the crew. We'll see you back tomorrow night, 7 o'clock Central. InfoWars Nightly News.